Welcome. Our first order of business tonight is a public hearing concerning the capital improvement project at the Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport and the proposed issuance of the Series B notes. Is there any... Jim, microphone, hello? Hello? Am I on?
Hello?
That's better, right? Am I on? Okay. Good evening. Tonight I'd like to open the hearing on the capital improvement project at the Ithaca-Tompkins Regional Airport and the proposed issuance of the Series B notes. Is there anybody who would like to speak on that topic?
This is for the public hearing, right?
This is a public hearing.
Okay, cool.
Just say your name and where
I'm Sherry Cortice from Ithaca, and I'm here to speak in opposition to the new airport. And I've also written up some comments, but I can't read from paper, so I'll pass these out. Here, legislative. You don't mind. I moved here in 2013, and I love this city, and I started reading the IPCC climate reports probably 2012, and they've progressively gotten worse. A new airport is the last thing we need. I know that Governor Cuomo has given us part of the money, and then you want the county taxpayers to fund the rest. I don't think we should be funding it. There's also a federal customs enforcement facility that will be there. If you Google that, you will see that it comes up as a detention facility locator for ICE. We don't need more runways because jet fuel is terrible for the environment. We are supposed to be mitigating an adaptation. When I started reading the climate reports in 2012, the date was 2100 that we had till. Now it's backed up to 2040. And that's how wrong they have been. With the development that's gone on since I've lived here, because when I came to visit in 2012, it was beautiful downtown with the big trees and the benches, and then that was wiped clean. And I know you had to do your septic system, but the trees, I don't know. And then the whole downtown is not even the same. The businesses are having to leave because they can't afford the high rents. And this Tompkins County IDA is part of this airport expansion because it frees up 7.6 acres, all this economic development on the waterfront. We cannot develop the waterfront either. These are things that shouldn't be developed. We are on occupied land. This is not our land. And when I first moved here, there was a treaty we signed at the Common Council. I don't know what happened to that, but we need to be stewards of our environment. And the airport is not what we need. ICE enforcement agents are not welcoming. That's not welcoming. So I just want to make my views known that I'm against it, and I wrote some things up, so thank you very much. I have a new grandbaby, that's why I haven't been here, so I babysit every day, but I'll make it when I can, so thank you very much.
Thank you, Sherry, and congratulations.
Thank you.
If there's anybody else who'd like to speak now, I have Josh Brokaw for the public hearing, Josh, or for the public comment?
Hi.
What? Josh? What? Just a second, Barbara. Josh, you...
I'm Barbara Regenspan. I live on Cascadilla Avenue in downtown Ithaca. I think there are three major reasons to oppose the airport expansion project. The first is that the multiple millions of dollars that this project will cost taxpayers is being justified by the Tompkins County Industrial Development Agency. The record of whose incompetence and apparent dishonesty in reporting is publicly available in the very recent operational review of the authority's budget office. I'll quote from that report a little bit in a minute. The second is a 5,000-square-foot federal customs facility, 5,000 square feet attached to the claim of one customs officer being hired by the county. My downtown apartment is 1,000 square feet, and it feels enormous. 5,000 square feet and one customs agent. This makes no sense at all. It sounds like what we're talking about is, you know, the border is customs and border protection. We've already had ICE raids in this community, which leads me to the third reason to oppose the airport expansion project, and that is this specious claim that it's somehow associated with Ithaca's friendliness to, quote, foreigners. And the claims in that regard suggest that that because Ithaca is so friendly to foreigners, it's a perfect place to attract Chinese tourists. And I want to know where is the connection? There's some claim that there are so many Asian students at Cornell and Ithaca College, and their families will spend the projected $15,000 per Chinese tourist. We have no idea where the figure comes from. That money will somehow be spent in Ithaca because these people have students at Ithaca College and Cornell, despite the fact that they fly into New York City and that's where their students meet them to spend their money. So I see three reasons. The three reasons are that we don't have any reason to trust the projections of the Tompkins County Industrial Development Agency. First, to quote that report, 9 of the 14 cost-benefit analyses prepared for projects approved by the agency in 2016 and 17 were inaccurate or missing key information. Some cost-benefit analyses were missing the amount of requested tax exemptions. Some had incorrect job creation and retention expectations. Some had incorrect property tax exemption amounts. As a result, the board is basing its decision regarding whether to approve financial assistance for these projects on inaccurate information. So based on inaccurate information, taxpayers are supposed to approve a $7 million project that is going to bring ICE into Ithaca. It's completely counter. The whole project is completely counterintuitive and irrational at a time when we are desperately needing funding for things like affordable housing, for mental health services publicly available, and to really seriously address the needs of addiction recovery from addiction. There are so many things we need this money for. Anyway, thank you.
I have one other blue form here. Let me just let folks know, as a public hearing, there's no 3-minute clock, but I would ask the public's consideration because we have a lot of items tonight. During public comment, which will come up in a few minutes, that's when we do run the 3-minute clock. So, as I said, public hearing, you don't have to sign a blue form. You don't have to be limited to 3 minutes, but, we would all appreciate your getting to the point, and we thank you so much for being here. So is there anybody else to speak? Josh, did you want to come up now? Or?
I'm sure.
Okay.
Howdy, folks. How are you today? So hopefully you all saw my email early Monday morning and Patricia's piece. I thought it was a very good question. The sort of piece that truthsayers really exist to support is, we have a good question. What are the answers? I did find one document online just before I came here, that was what I was looking for as far as aimed at airport authorities and officials who are asking customs to come into their town. What I thought was interesting, and I don't know if Mr. Hall or someone else could confirm this, but it said basically for a customs facility you needed 15,000 passengers, 2,000 arrivals a year, but if you're under that threshold, then you essentially can pay for one agent to be at that facility. If my presumption is correct, that's the case we're in, then I think it makes it even more important that we're really taking a look at what we are literally inviting in and paying for to have in our city. In my opinion, maybe if someone in this town ever decides to give me a $45,000 a year job, I'll fly somewhere once in a while. But as I wrote in May, in a column when the governor came to town, and I didn't go to it. I just used someone else's quotes because those, come on, groundbreaking inside people. Let's give that a break. But in any case, the airport has nothing to do with me. I made like $4,000 last year. People living in the jungle has nothing to do with me. The customs, you know, the other number in here on that document, they're looking for 2,500 incidents a year where someone's bringing in $2,000 or more of goods. This is about money. It's about taxes. It's about international commerce. It's not about the poor. It's not about the people we could put, let's see, $15,000 a pop. Second Wind could put in, I don't know, someone else do the math, but a lot of cottages. We could, like, house the jungle for half of what we're even taking on bonds tonight. So that's the bigger issue, you know. I agree we need to, like, look at what our actual carbon impacts are doing from the airport. But on that specific point of what are we bringing in and what is the government actually using this facility for versus just what they tell us it's used for, because we know all governments lie, and the bigger they are, usually the more they lie. We need those answers tonight before we need any vote. Thanks.
Anybody else who'd like to speak at the public hearing? Please start with your name.
Hi. My name is Patricia Rodriguez, and I am a member of the steering committee for the Tompkins County Immigrant Rights Coalition. I have questions that I expressed in an article that Josh published, because I think there needs to be greater collective scrutiny of this project, especially but not limited to the federal customs facility. I worry that we make sure that we are relying on accurate information to determine whether a project should be approved. As I say in the article, the federal facility amounts to no small amount of space, but very little information is publicly available. We're told by the airport director that there will be only one agent paid for and directed by the county. But what a federal such facility really means is a U.S. Customs and Border Protection facility, which operates under the auspices of the U.S. Homeland Security Department. I provided a video in that article of what a recently built facility in Boca Raton Airport is like, and it is even of smaller size than the one that is projected to be constructed here. You all are aware of what ICE has been doing in locations around Ithaca and in Ithaca. You know of the actions of the Border Patrol in detaining children, families, adults for long times, and the attacks against migrants with tear gas, and the honestly horrendous and discriminatory stance and the words of the president of this country. So I hope that before you give any resolution to the request or the approval of this $7.5 million for this project, I urge you to have the details down and that they're shared publicly. It's far too important of an issue to let slide by. Specifically, my questions are, what will this facility entail? How many immigration officials for this 5,000 square foot facility? Is there jurisdiction and reach limited to the airport, but or also like other areas around here? Are there plans or possible plans to use this location for temporary or permanent detention of immigrants? Will there be deportation flights leaving from Ithaca to international locations? Can you first review the documents from Border Patrol and the Department of Homeland Security concerning this facility specifically and have this shared with others, with the public? Do we really need a customs facility, being that there's some evidence that the same type of facility, customs facility in Rochester and Syracuse isn't really used that much? So why do we need a 5,000 square foot facility? Why is the county paying for this alleged one lone officer in this facility? How much of the local tax dollars will be needed to construct this facility? And what kind of fee-based services will this facility entail? Because that also came up when I researched the Boca Raton Airport facility. So thanks for considering this and for listening.
Thank you, Patricia. Anybody else? All right, the public hearing is closed. I'm sorry? Well, then please go up to the mic so we know what's going on. Hi.
Hello, my name is Beth Harris, and I'm also with the Tompkins County Immigrant Rights Coalition. I want to speak to the airport project. Actually, I'm just learning about it, so I don't have a lot of details. I think we all are. But the concerns that Patricia just expressed, I feel very strongly about. I was just recently down at the border, and the United States is expanding its borders to go very deep within the United States, but even to go into Mexico, to southern Mexico. And are we trying to become part of this militarized project? And I, when Patricia mentioned, you know, if people are asking, how are we going to use that space? We know that children have been incarcerated in these kinds of empty governmental spaces that aren't even designed for that. And so if there's not really a use, it can be misused. From my understanding, the Thompson County Legislature had made a kind of commitment to a sanctuary county, and so that, for me, indicates some kind of concern about our immigrant brothers and sisters and not becoming part of an intensified surveillance process. And this can take place in many ways. It's not just that this is an entry port with the airport, but most of the immigrants then who are being arrested now have been in the United States for many years, and they're arrested often when they're using public transportation. So it can become really a part of that militarized, repressive process that is actually targeting the residents and the working people of our own county. And so I'm really concerned that we go into this with a lot of information, and that the county, you know, think about what its stand is in relationship to providing, in quotes, security through the repression of our immigrant brothers and sisters.
Thank you. Is there anybody else? All right, well, the public hearing is closed. Actually, hold on. Before I close the public hearing, I'd like to have Jason Molina on the record as part of the hearing. You had some information to add to some of these concerns.
I can update you now, or I can update you on my report.
I think let's put that in the public hearing, if that's okay.
Okay.
But pull the microphone closer.
Sure, sure. There are some good questions here, and I have some responses for some of them, and some we'll have to get back to the legislature and some of the public on. I think it's important to understand that there's no relationship between ICE or Immigration Customs Enforcement and this new facility. This facility is on the secure side of the airport. It's not suitable for really a rallying point or the suggestions, detention, deportation flights. That is not what this facility is used for, and there's no relationship between ICE and the construction of this facility. The inspection station simply allows for international guests and visitors to arrive directly to Tompkins County. It offers the prospect of pre-cleared commercial air service where the agent can check the manifest, but not inspecting passengers and cargo. There is a discussion about a user fee element of this. That is correct. The county has the ability or is required to pay for the agent present, but also has the ability to charge user fees for those commercial air services or passenger air services that come in and use that facility as a pre-clearing checking point. While the agent works for Customs Border Patrol, he or she is responsive to the airport, and the airport has the ability to shut down the facility if it so chooses at any point in time. I think it's important to note that the borrowing or the request for borrowing is a bond anticipation note. It's related to the construction of the project, because the project is slotted at a $20-plus million project from a cash flow perspective. This is a temporary bridge borrowing that allows the county to pay expenses as the construction takes place, then seek reimbursement. That reimbursement is then received from the state and the federal government as we have different aid packages in relation to this project, and then the ban is then paid back at the end of the project. That is the purpose of this bond anticipation note. We are still seeking some additional funds for other elements of the project, but this is not simply a $7.5 million bond intended to go into debt service paying for the county. In fact, the goal here, and we're very close to that goal, is that the project not be paid for with any taxpayer dollars, or there is capacity in the enterprise fund, which is the airport fund itself, to handle some additional debt. So the object here is not to have a debt bearing on the general levy or the general fund in the county's general budget. I would also add, the question about the size of the facility, I don't have an answer for that. We can definitely get with Mike Hall to talk about why the size of the facility is the way it is. But when we spoke to Mike earlier today, there is no relationship to ICE, which is the Immigration Customs Enforcement element of the Department of Homeland Security and this facility. So there are questions. I understand that. I know Mike has reached out to a few folks that have asked those questions. He's more than willing to sit down with some folks to answer those questions. But those are just some general statements in response to what was said this evening.
Just a second. When we talk about airport fund balance to help pay for this, that money and everything that funds the airport comes from passenger facility charges, from the users of the airport, not from general property taxes or sales tax revenue from the county budget.
So unlike other regional airports, Binghamton, Elmira, so on and so forth, our airport is fortunate enough that it's self-sustaining. It supports itself from fees generated through its users. So it does not have county dollars per se funding its operation.
Thank you, Jason.
I'm sorry. My name's Madonna Stallman. I'm a new resident of Tompkins County. Some of the things that you just said there, one of them was in regards to the size of the building, and you were speaking very quickly and kind of in muffled tones at that point.
Right.
And we were not clear at all as to what you said, or I should say I was not clear at all as to what you said, speaking to the size of the building and your transparency on what that building, 5,000 square feet, is going to be used for. What is it going to be used for? That's the question, and I'd like a clear answer.
I understand that, and I apologize if you could not hear me. Mike Hall is the best person to talk more explicitly about that. I cannot tell why the size of the facility is the way it is. What I can advise is that it is intended, the inspection station is intended to allow international guests and visitors to arrive directly at Tompkins County Airport. It also offers the prospect of pre-cleared commercials air service where the agent will be checking a manifest, not inspecting the passengers or the cargo. The airport director is the best person to speak specifically about that if there are questions beyond that. With respect to the question of the relationship with ICE, this facility has no relationship with ICE, the Immigration Customs Enforcement Agency. So that's the information I have to provide on this. Again, I know Mike has reached out to members of the media that have contacted him to set up a meeting to answer those specific questions, and that's probably the best avenue for the follow-up.
Yeah, I just said that Mike was...
I said the airport director has reached out to the members of the media. Josh, I believe you've received some contact from Mike Hall, the airport director, has asked to meet and would be happy to answer those questions in person.
But these are critical questions. Why are they being left?
This isn't a debate.
If you have questions.
Okay, this is Barbara, you've had your turn. So since I hadn't closed the public hearing, if a new speaker wants to come to the microphone, that would be okay. Now, I just want to mention also that, I'm sorry, if you can't hear us, we're doing our best, okay?
It's recorded.
It's recorded. It'll be online. Okay. Is that better? Well, okay. I promise you there's nothing Nobody's trying to hide anything by not being able to be heard, okay? Please. Let me just also mention that I know that, a big purpose of the customs facilities for cargo was for commercial cargo to and from our industrial producers, our commercial businesses that trade with international consumers. And so the size of the facility may be to be able to hold large, you know, pallets of materials and machinery that's getting imported or exported. So that's another issue. But as Jason has said, my call has reached out to Josh and others to meet personally, and he's waiting for a response as far as last I heard. So, and you didn't speak yet?
I have not spoken yet. My name is Ute Ritz-Deutsch, and I'm also with the Tompkins County Immigrant Rights Coalition. I appreciate the notion that Customs and Border Protection is not the same as ICE, but I would like to just refresh people's memory. When Rochester was a port of entry because of the ferry, that's when we started to get Customs and Border Protection established there. Long after the ferry went bankrupt, that office not only stayed, but now has 10 times more agents than it initially did. And if you have, you know, a budget, if you have the people, what are those people going to do all day? So we are technically within the 100 air mile zone that Customs and Border Protection claims as being the border. That means this area is technically under their jurisdiction, and a lot of the work that ends up being done by CBP is not at all that dissimilar to work that ICE does. In terms of jurisdiction, the main difference is Customs and Border Protection is supposed to deal with people who are either entering or have been here for a short while, whereas ICE technically has jurisdiction that's further in the interior. Or, you know, for people who've been here a long time. Oftentimes what's been happening up in the Rochester area and those northern counties is ICE and Customs and Border Protection have worked in tandem, and oftentimes it has nothing to do with securing the border. Again, once you have the manpower, once you have a budget, what are those people going to be doing? And that's a question that I would assume the director of the airport may not have an answer to, but that's something that we as a county really need to think through, as Beth Harris and Patricia Rodriguez have mentioned. So I would urge you all to consider that. Thank you.
All right, with that, we'll close the public hearing, and I'd like to ask you to join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. Roll call of members.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Morey?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Ms. Black?
Here.
Ms. Champion?
Here.
Ms. Dawson?
Here.
Mr. Granison?
Here.
Mr. John?
Here.
Ms. Kellis?
Here.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Ms. Corman?
Present.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
14 members present.
Thank you. I'm going to move a few things around tonight. We have some staff waiting for some relatively quick things. So roll with me, okay? I'm going to ask for an executive session at the end of the meeting to discuss litigation, labor negotiations, and a personnel issue with respect to a particular person. So that would come later. Are there any blue forms for public privilege of the floor? We don't have any up here right now. Okay, just you can pass that up and go to the mic. Rules for speaking under privilege of the floor, a little bit different than a public hearing. So by signing the form, you agree to the following. I agree to a 3-minute time limit, and the clock will be up here on the wall. I agree not to raise my voice. I agree not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of the peace. I agree not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, I agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. Transferring time to another person is not permitted. I agree that if I cause a disruption and am asked to leave, I will leave the chambers. So I have Noah Shapiro-Tamir.
Thank you. As mentioned, my name is Noah Shapiro-Tamir. I'm a high school senior, and I reside in Ulysses. Even though it's not on the agenda today, I'm here to speak in favor of the proposed plastic bag ban. I want to remind you as a legislature that there are young people here in Tompkins County, constituents of yours, that want to see a plastic bag ban move through the legislature, and to see you, our elected representatives, voting in favor of this ban and by extension in favor of sustainability in our county and leadership on the issue of plastic pollution. To tell a little story, just this morning I saw a plastic bag caught in a tree outside a window of Ithaca High School. This may seem small or not representative of a larger issue, but that image was a visual reminder to me that plastic is currently flowing through our air, our water bodies, our natural sites here in Tompkins County, and our bodies. In honor of the recent climate summit in Poland, in honor of the new year, and in honor of the many children born in 2018 and those who will be born in 2019, I encourage you to, as soon as possible, bring the plastic bag ban to the table for a vote, and each and every one of you to vote in favor of it, so that we can have a sustainable future in our county. Thank you.
Thank you, Noah. I'm Sherry Cortice. Is there anybody else?
Okay, hi. Sherry Cortice, City of Ithaca. I would like a resolution introduced one day to put a moratorium on the Tompkins County IDA projects until we can know that they are creating and retaining jobs, because we continue to fund these projects with City Center just as being built and the studio apartments, $1,545, and that's the lowest for one studio. The one bedrooms go up to over $2,000. This is not below market rate rent, which is what they put on their application, and they received quite a bit. But I wanted to also pass this one. I only have one copy of this report for you guys, but I don't know if all you have it, but except the people on the TCIDA board. But it talks about all the jobs, all the businesses that have received money and how they are not creating the jobs. So I'll just pass this out. Jobs are not being created and retained, and that's the purpose of the IDAs. We're supposed to increase our tax base by giving people good jobs, and then they can afford to buy or rent, and everything's not unaffordable. Right now, nobody can rent. And when you talk about affordable housing leaves out our Section 8. And I don't know. I need to do a lot more research, but I wish you guys would use your conscience and think more about just how bad people are hurting, how bad of a situation the country's in right now. It really is, and we're not insulated from that. Donald Trump is the president. He does have the authorization from the NDAA Act to do pretty much what he wants. That was approved in 2012. I want to make sure that was understood, because with that Homeland Security, with this facility out at the airport, they can use that for what they want to use that for. So once it's built, they will do what they want. But anyways, I would like to do somebody, I have a lot of research that I've done, because even when the bonds come due for IC, Cornell, or TC3, or Longview, they get reissued for another 20 years, 15, 20 years. They never get paid. When will, you know, that's what I want to say. This has to stop, or at least reassess to see it helping the county. Everybody had their house assessed value reassessed this year at a higher value. Everybody I know, in all my neighborhood, I looked it up on the assessments, everybody had an increase in their taxes, which leads the landlords to increase their rent, and on. But nobody ever really receives any benefit, so, except for the wealthy and the people that can afford it. So thank you.
Thank you, Sherry. I don't have any more blue forms. If there's nobody else who wants to speak, thank you very much for coming. And we're going to have Duck from the City of Ithaca, and then we'll have legislators' privilege, so you might hear some comments in response, but maybe or not necessarily. We are, the item that we have to debate is at the end of the agenda. So, Duck, you're still here, right? Hi, Duck. How are you?
Hello.
Thanks very much for coming tonight.
Absolutely. Thank you. Just a few things. I think you've probably heard that the IRA selected Ficino as the preferred developer for the Green Street Garage rebuilding project. Old library demolition has started. It's been a big topic in the neighborhood. Most of the interesting things happened at the Planning and Economic Development Committee meeting last week that I'm actually not a member of, but I was there for some of it. So the Department of Public Works is in the middle of doing a flood study. It's pretty dire, and so right now they've just done computer modeling that shows that flooding, unsurprisingly, is set to get worse, and that inlet dredging will not have a significant impact on the flooding around the creeks. For that, we need to see either berm construction of 2 to 6 feet in some areas or dredging of the creeks themselves. Next steps are field reconnaissance and feasibility studies about, you know, practical steps to mitigate those flood risks. Codification of the green building policy that we adopted this year is moving forward with a target of third quarter 2019. Historic designation of the old train bus station of Delaware, Lackawanna, and Western Railroad station in the West End. That'll probably be non-controversial compared to other historic designations this year. Planning Committee contemplated a moratorium on infill, but it got shot down pretty easily. So other planning staff will look at other ways to mitigate some of the concerns that people have about backyard infill or losing owner-occupied housing and stuff like that. And lastly, a lot of my constituents have concerns about the Tioga Street, Sears Street purchase, and I know Rich is meeting with some neighbors soon. It's just an FYI that is, some people are talking about that.
Thanks very much, Doug. Any questions from folks? Annie.
Thanks for your report. Wondering if you could elaborate a little bit on the Green Street project. I heard there's going to be, as far as the some affordable housing there.
Yeah, so it's 206 units of housing targeted to 50 to 80% AMI. 20 of them are supportive housing units that will be managed by TCA, Tompkins Community Action, targeting, I think, those with mental health needs. It'll include a 30,000-square-foot conference center, ground floor retail. They're currently negotiating with – so every project proposer besides the Peak Rimland team could not use the eastern third of the site because it's owned by Jeff Rimland. But the Ficino team is in negotiations with Jeff Rimland to redevelop and use that eastern third, potentially put the conference center there. A bunch of us had concerns about active ground use where Ficino originally proposed their conference center. And so if we can move it into that Rimland property and keep the two-thirds, the western two-thirds for retail use, that would be good. And to that end, they've started talks with Green Star to put an anchor store there. This would replace their DeWitt Mall location.
I'm glad the city chose a developer that was going to do affordable housing. So glad about that. Thank you.
Anybody else? Henry.
Can you tell me more about the infill development debate?
So it started with earlier this year, the construction of a lot of ugly duplexes on South Hill. Knock down an old house, build multiple structures on a lot. And so you may know that there was an overlay district put there to essentially put a halt to infill development until it got studied further. And since then, similar projects have been proposed for Northside and Fall Creek. And so there was a concern that there would be a trend of developers snapping up owner-occupied homes on large lots and then putting homes in the backyard. So this was up for discussion. Some members, but there was not a majority interest on the planning committee for putting a halt to infill, since we recognize that, well, I shouldn't say we, I'm not on the committee, like I said, but there is a recognition among a bunch of us that infill is good, is the kind of character-preserving development that is acceptable. And so I think planning will look into other methods, like design guidelines. Like a lot of the commentary is about how ugly the buildings are, and so design guidelines might take care of a lot of those concerns.
Is there any consideration of restriction of Fall Creek?
I don't think so. South Hill had a special situation in that it was heavily student-occupied with a lot of partying and stuff. The main approach that the planning department wants to take is to continue their comprehensive plan, phase two planning, starting with an infill study. And so to do a citywide comprehensive study on the future of infill development as opposed to halting it in the near term.
Okay. Anybody else? Shauna.
Hey, Doc. Thanks for coming in. I was wondering, I know that parking in front of the library has been an ongoing issue, and we're all trying to figure this out. I actually had someone contact me in regards to the handicap parking for the library, and stating that since the 15-minute parking is no longer there, and there is just not enough handicap parking. Is this something that you guys are working on the city level?
Yeah. It's a constant conversation because we know there's problems there. So, I mean, to be clear, the parking on Green Street was moved. The three spots were moved to Cayuga Street. So the same number are there, whether or not it's as convenient to go on that street or not. But overall, yeah, there's definitely recognition that it's a difficult spot. One reason why the city will now be charging for inner-city bus arrivals and departures is to fund streetscape improvements to make things better. But that's not to say that we're not going to look at longer-term solutions, too. But I'll convey that handicap parking issue.
Anyone else? Doc, I wanted to ask, I have heard that the city's doing or has started or will start a parking study. And I was wondering, can you talk at all about that?
Yeah, this will be fairly comprehensive. They're currently, I'd have to find my notes, but they're putting together various stakeholders to give input into this, you know, business owners and mobility experts, accessibility experts, et cetera, to judge the city's needs and what pricing should look like. So there's pretty much no consensus on. I'm a very much a parking should pay for itself kind of person, and there are colleagues of mine that are not don't agree with that. So we don't really have a consensus on that issue, and so they'll probably study various approaches to the problem.
So are they going to be bringing the commons merchants and landlords and business owners down there as part of that group?
Yep.
And the DIA?
Yes.
So is this focused? Is the study going to include what the needs are for current uses as well as the projected build-out, or just about how can we break even?
No, it'll definitely be about the needs going forward with, you know, projected population increase and you know, hopeful retail presence.
Okay. We appreciate that a lot. Okay. That's really important to know. Henry.
Last time we met, we talked about the housing commission that was discussed in the Daily Sun. What's gone on with that? What's the status of that now?
Yeah, so I think that was mentioned prematurely because there hasn't been a decision on how that'll be formed. So, you know, we have these new commissions, and there was a thought, you know, after, you know, council had the same questions. Like, we read it in the Daily Sun, and we asked the mayor. And so there is a preference among many of us that we should just use the existing commission structure, maybe the Community Life Commission. Also, the issue was pretty specifically about rental safety and not housing as a whole. because you know those students had a code enforcement problem. So I would suspect that any that whether the task is handled by the Community Life Commission or that a new task, like a task force is formed, that it would focus on student rental issue, well, not just student, but rental safety issues and code enforcement issues.
Anyone else? Doug, thank you very much. We understand, like, you have to just stand there and be a sort of encyclopedia on whatever comes to our minds. So we really appreciate your and George's taking turns to come here and have a conversation with us.
Absolutely.
Thanks very much. Have a good holiday.
Thanks, you too.
I'm a little torn here. I've got staff waiting for something on the consent agenda. If it's all right, I think I'll run through the consent agenda, then ask for the one resolution for housing to be added so Megan can go somewhere else. Let's see, any other staff? Terry, are you waiting for something in particular? Is it on consent? I can't remember.
No,
okay. What? Okay. How are you doing, Don? Are you okay to wait a minute? Okay. Thank you very much. I want to recognize Don Barber being here from the Municipal, the Health Insurance Consortium. So we're going to have a good conversation about that. But let me run through the first. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Mike Ziegler.
Yes, the housing agenda. I want to add resolution R. It's authorization to contract with the Bonadio Group for loan valuation services.
All
so
right.
I move to add that.
Seconded by Dave. All in favor of adding it to the agenda, please raise your hands. Any opposed? Thank you. That's added. So let me run through the consent, and then I'll ask you, Mike, to move that so we can have Megan be here to discuss the any questions. So Resolution A, authorization to participate in various contracts led by any government entity of the United States of America, ID 8231. Resolution B, authorization to disperse funds, County Administration, ID 8156. Resolution C, delegating to the finance director of the County of Tompkins, New York, the power to authorize the issuance of and to sell $10 million revenue anticipation notes of said county in anticipation of receipt of state aid during the fiscal year of said county commencing January 1st, 2019, ID 8155. Resolution D, authorization to sign drafts, checks, County Administrator, ID 8153. Resolution E, authorization for Finance Director to make year-end transfers, appropriations, and budget adjustments as required, ID 8152. Resolution F, town and city budgets and printing of tax rates, ID 8151. Resolution G, approving completed tax rolls and directing the executing and delivery of warrants, ID 8150. Resolution H, authorization to continue the home ownership and housing rehabilitation programs through the use of program income funds and to increase contracts with the Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services, ID 8289. Resolution I, budget transfer, Department of Emergency Response, ID 8272. Resolution J, resolution determining that the Tompkins County Legislature will not take action at this time to opt out of the New York State law that allows ride-hailing services to operate within Tompkins County, ID 8277. Resolution K, tax roll refund, City of Ithaca, 70.7-4.2, ID 8264. Resolution L, urging the nearest...
Hold.
Okay. And I have some appointments. To the Board of Health, Dr. David Evelyn. To the Youth Services Board, Kaki Wunderlich. Personal Emergency Response Service Advisory Board, Edward Bergman. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Anna Kellis. Environmental Management Council, Maureen Bolton. To the Agriculture and Farmland Protection Board, Daniel J. Carey and Paul Geer. Can I get a motion on the consent agenda? Moved by Annie, seconded by Leslin. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? Thank you very much. Now, Mike, could you take Resolution R, which is in everybody's red folder?
Sure. I would like to move Resolution R. It's the authorization to contract with the Bono Deal Group for loan valuation services.
Seconded by Deborah. So I'm going to bring Megan up to the microphone. This and the one that was on the consent agenda are related, and it's been an odyssey for the last few months. having to do with housing and urban development in New York State, and it's been really fun. An example of when what happens to your work plan when the state or federal government just kind of pull the rug out from under you. So help us out here with what we're doing.
Certainly. So the resolution that was on the consent agenda had to do with our existing New York State Community Development Block Grant program income funds. These CDBG program income funds result from, we've had a number of CDBG awards through the state over the years funding our homeownership program primarily. And with that program, oftentimes assistance was provided in the form of loans to lower income first-time home buyers in the county. And when they go to repay those loans in years to come, those payments are considered program income by the state. In the past, we've been able to revolve those loans forward, and so as payments are made and money comes in, that program income is able to be spent to help the next round of home buyers. Unfortunately, the state has changed its policy with program income funds. So as of March 31st, 2019, all of these funds will have to be sent back to the state. So the first resolution that was on the consent agenda is essentially helping us for any unanticipated income that we're going to be receiving through those monthly payments, and sometimes someone sells a house and pays the whole amount in full unexpectedly, and to make sure that we can try to spend down, per the state's recommendations, the program income funds that the county has and will receive up through March for eligible activities that we already have agreements for, which our home ownership and owner rehab assistance for low to moderate income households. So that's the first piece. The second piece is the actual CDBG loan portfolio. So the actual loans these home buyers have, the county holds this loan portfolio, and because of these policy changes from the state level, all of the payments that are made for years to come after that March 31st date, that money would also have to be sent back to New York State. And so we've been talking to the state about they're not necessarily trying to yank all this money back. It's a policy change, so they have to take it back. But understanding that communities want to try to retain some value for community benefit here. And so one thing we had been talking with New York State staff about is the idea of selling the portfolio, and then the sales proceeds from that portfolio becomes the program income that we now have today rather than in the years to come. And as long as we can commit that program income before March 31st to a CDBG-eligible project or multiple projects with the state blessing, we would be able to use that money. And then those loans, those payments would no longer, you know, the purchaser would hold those and would be receiving those payments and not need to interact with the state in any way. It would just be us interacting with the state to try to commit these funds now. So it's basically trying to take future loan payments that we would automatically return to the state and instead get some present value out of them and commit them to a CDBG-eligible activity.
All right, there'll be a quiz at the end of this meeting.
And I should say that this contract would allow us to get a CPA firm to establish what the actual value of the portfolio is, and so we could then talk to potential purchasers locally about going through with a sale. And a big thanks to Rick Snyder for helping to identify a firm, because many of these loans are very complicated and not easily understandable in kind of typical CPA world.
Thank you so much, Megan. And yes, big thanks to Rick for going through a bunch of firms and then finally nabbing Bonadio for us. This is great. Are there any questions for Megan or Rick? All right. I just also want to thank David and Megan, especially Megan, for understanding this issue, for picking it up. The only county in New York State that realized, the first county to even realize we had this problem with the federal HUD pulling back the money from New York State. And following that, the only county in the state that has taken any action to try to use the money before the deadline, try to figure out how to use the future money and make it go to work for our residents. And it's a huge accomplishment. It's a really big deal. It's sort of really making lemonade out of lemons. And, you know, when we talk about a department's work plan, this was nowhere on the work plan. So this is one of the things that happens. Why didn't we do such and such this year? Well, do you remember this other thing that happened? So I just, you know, appreciate so much your diligence in understanding this issue and working through it and finding a way to maximize the value that we can get out of this these funds. All right, anything else? Are we ready to vote? All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you. And I should have said that the Resolution H on the consent agenda was the revised version. You heard me say that, right? Yes, okay. So that's just added the 2019 to the last line. All right. Thank you very much, Megan. And if it's okay, if we let us take Anna, you want to take N and O so that Terry can begin her holiday, perhaps, or at least her evening.
You said M.
N and O.
Just N. N and O.
I have an M also. But that not,
yeah,
not
but not for
Nancy, so
not
I'll
for,
just do N and O.
Right.
So N, appropriation from contingent fund, terminal pay, workforce development coordinator, Office of Employment and Training. This is ID number 8203.
Seconded by Deborah. It's packet page 26, if you have. Yeah. Any discussion? Short roll call.
Mr. Lane?
Yes.
Ms. Corman?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous. Thank you.
And Resolution O, appropriation from contingent fund, terminal pay, transition workforce specialist, Office of Employment and Training, and that is ID 8202.
Seconded by Deborah. Any discussion? Also short form?
Mr. Lane?
Yes.
Ms. Corman?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Terry. Good to see you tonight. Okay, let's see. Sorry. Let us go back to legislator privilege of the floor. Dan Klein.
I have two items from TCAT, Tompkins Consolidated Area Transit. One is that TCAT earlier this month carried its 4 millionth passenger of the year. For several years, TCAT had reached that number, and then last year fell just short of it, just a little shy. So not only is TCAT back over 4 million, but is going to be a percent or two or three above, you know, where TCAT's ever been before. So that's good news. More people are using transit. And it's especially good news because, as far as we know, we are the only upstate transit agency to have an increase at all this year. So that is good news all around. Second TCAT item is just wanted to mention that TCAT board passed a resolution honoring Peter Stein, who former county legislator and TCAT board member for 6 years, who has now finished his term on TCAT. So we passed a resolution, which I have a paper copy that I'll pass around if you want to look at it, and I will send an electronic version so that you can get it into the record. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. Anyone else? Rich John.
I just wanted to speak for a moment about the Tompkins County Industrial Development Agency. I sit on the IDA, so full disclosure. Given that several members of the public came and spoke about the IDA and suggested that we're not getting good value from having an IDA in our community, and I strongly disagree with those comments. I can understand how if the goal is to spend money on social programming, this may seem separate from that, but it really isn't. We need a strong local government in order to support the social programming that is so important to all of us. One of the speakers mentioned, in fact, the airport and said, this has nothing to do with me, or to the people behind the big box stores in what's known as the jungle. And that's just not true. We spend so much of our time as a legislature looking at our budget, trying to figure out How do we pay for the important programming that helps people, and particularly people in need, such as are trying to live down in the jungle? It takes a strong local economy to do that well, and we are really, really fortunate in Tompkins County that we have that economy. And some of that comes from the activity of the Industrial Development Agency. We have a very good record of being conservative in granting tax abatements, doing it very judiciously, and making sure that there is benefit in terms of economic growth, growth in the tax base, and jobs. And contrary to what some of the people said, we have a very good record. We've been successful. And certainly for all those people that have jobs because of the economic growth and in part what the Industrial Development Agency has done, I think they would agree with me. This is useful, and it's helpful to our community. So I just wanted to make sure I put that on the record. Thank you.
Thank you, Rich. Ann Corman.
Thank you, Martha. Oh, a couple things. One of the things I attended this past week was an interactive workshop about the opioid crisis. And I know, for instance, with Sean, I said, I'll tell you about it and take notes. But it was really Rich attended, Henry, and forgive me if I forget anybody else. So that was it. And so for me, it was really a thing that you had to attend. So it wasn't really like there was a huge takeaway, except I would really encourage people, they're going to try and have some more, to really go and, you know, we talked about what things are being offered now and what type of things that we could do in the future. But a lot of it was just trying to go through even emotionally, like what are the issues, how does this affect us on a daily basis. And for me, it was really good to be able to start talking with a lot of people and put it out there. And let's see. It looks like most people that spoke left, if not everybody. But I want to thank Noah, who spoke from the town of Ulysses about the in support of the plastic bag ban. Nice to see young folks coming out and saying what they'd like us folks to do here. And the airport, the customs center, to my understanding, is just that, as a customs center that will allow us to be able to have flights, for instance, possibly down to New York City or somewhere else. And this would be in the future, that you could go through customs and then not have to go through customs again, say in New York City. But at first it would be for private flights. So, you know, that might be coming from overseas, pretty much right now probably Canada, so that they could come in here without having to stop Syracuse, for instance. And as I just want to reiterate what Jason said, it's not taxpayer money. The resolution tonight is about transitional money while they're getting their funding. And IDA. So I do think we can do better with the IDA as far as encouraging and supporting local jobs. That's all I'll say on that now, but I think we can do better. And the last thing I want to say is regarding something that happened at our planning, development, environmental quality meeting today. I had spoken with a couple of the folks, Dan and Amanda, and I was promised them that I was going to push that the stuff about the forest, the county forest, that I was going to push that we could postpone that for a year on making a decision and learning a lot of different things that I did in between promising that. I had changed my mind, and so by the time I got to the meeting, I thought differently about it, and I'm learning that I maybe shouldn't promise. I shouldn't, because I'd like to, you know, we get a lot of different information, so by the time I come and sit down, I might have other information, and I did have other information that changed my mind. So I wanted to publicly apologize to Dan and Amanda, and I'm going to try and do better on that. That's it.
Anna Kellis, and then Mike Sigler.
Like, we need to have a confessional somewhere here. That would probably be helpful. So, yeah, there you go. a few things. One, and I've heard this a few times, and I guess this is for not for any of us here, for colleagues. I think I'm speaking for myself. I only speak for myself. It might resonate with some of you. For anybody who's watching, though, I've had an experience a couple times where people come to the microphone and say, well, all government lies. But I just want to remind people that it's very easy to dehumanize people. And when we call humans sort of government, I totally get it. It's instinctual to want to do that. But I found every single one of my colleagues here to be very accessible. And all of our phone numbers, I think, are even published on various websites. So I just encourage people to reach out. If what we say is, not all of us, but some of us, if what we are saying and the information that we're offering is not something that people want to believe, then, you know, that's sort of a dead end. But I have found that we're very willing to at least try to get the information. So I really encourage people to remember that we're human and remember we're here. We're very receptive to work with people as representatives. The other thing I do want to mention, a reminder, this is our last meeting before Christmas and the holidays. Hanukkah's obviously started a while ago and several other holidays. Happy holidays to everyone. And a reminder that we have many wonderful, wonderful local shops in the downtown area and all of the municipalities. So if you are shopping, remember to shop local. And I do want to also mention that there's free parking from Friday through Monday in downtown. So for people who get very frustrated about the parking and trying to run in and out before you get a ticket, you do not have to shop to your heart's delight. There will not be parking fees. So that was my last announcement.
Best for last. Thank you, Anna. All right, okay. Mike Sigler, Mike Lane, Deborah, and then Shauna. Okay.
Okay. I just want to talk about two issues real quick. The IDA, so I wasn't on when a lot of these things were passed. However, I will say a lot of the folks that were speaking here, and I would speak to them, but they're not here, so speaking to whoever's watching. It's not like we're out there doling out money. It's not a grant program. You know, we're not taking your taxpayer money and saying, oh, no, build here. Here's some money. It's a tax abatement program. Sometimes it's a sales tax abatement with the hopes that, okay, we're going to abate your sales tax here in New York State, so you buy the materials that you need here in New York State as opposed to buying them in Pennsylvania or, you know, some other state. So I don't like that characterization when people think like we're just kind of giving out money. That's not how that works. Would reiterate a lot of the stuff that that Rich said, but he said it better than I would, so that's, I think he covered most of it. As for the airport, just a couple things. As for the one person who was saying, well, we should be spending this money on other issues. No, we can't do that. That's actually not a possibility of doing that. This money is directed towards a certain thing. And the money, is not coming out of taxpayer money, as you heard earlier. It's, you know, it's coming out of fees and other things like that. The customs facility, I was on the computer earlier because I was looking up Boca Raton. I wanted to see what their custom facility is like. It's 4,700 square feet. I'm going to go out on a limb here. I'm thinking that the federal government has a blueprint, and they say, hey, here's the blueprint for your customs facility, and you go, great, because that sounds about the same size. Don't know if that's true, but if I were to make a judgment call on it, that's pretty much what I would tell you. I can tell you what a custom facility at a small airport looks like. You know, my first cross-country flight when I got my private pilot's license, I flew into Rome, New York, Griffiths Air Force Base, really, really long runway. But they have a customs facility. I don't really know why, but they do. So you go, you want to fly to Toronto, you want to go watch the Yankees-Toronto game, you land, they come, they know you're coming because you had to call in, they check you out, and then when you fly back, you can touch down in Rome, you can touch down in Rochester, you can touch down in Syracuse. We want to be able to touch down right here. And it's really the key to being an international city. And it's not just for passengers. It's you know, everything that's coming in, you've got to check out, right? So it's not I'm a little worried that folks were so apt to kind of mischaracterize it as if there's some nefarious nefarious government thing going on. It's, you know, if you go to the one in Rome, you're going to laugh. It's one guy. You call him on the phone. comes out and visits you and says, oh, you're so-and-so? Oh, there's your license. Fantastic. Thanks for coming. If you've ever been to an upstate New York border crossing, it's pretty much the same. So anyway, those are just a couple of things I wanted to say. And, thanks.
Thank you, Mike. Deborah Dawson, Mike Lane, and Shauna Black.
So I have a couple of things. One, with respect to the airport, in addition to Jason's explanation about these being, a stopgap measure and not an actual borrowing to pay for the airport, it was also my understanding, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that when we accepted the state grant, we also committed ourselves to paying the entire cost of the project as it was approved by the state. So we don't really have a choice to make here in terms of whether or not we're going to have a customs facility at this point. We're committed to having a customs facility, and the only question is how we're going to pay for it. Am I wrong?
No, you're correct.
Okay. So that's my substantive comment. And my second comment is more personal. It is the last meeting of the first year of our class of five legislators. And it's hard for me to believe everything that the five of us have been through. I love all five of you. Or all four of you, and I love me too. But I also want to thank from the bottom of my heart all of our senior legislators for putting up with us, for teaching us, for mentoring us, and for not killing us, apparently. So thank you. I hope you all have a wonderful holiday, and I look forward to at least three more years of working with all of you.
Thank you, Deborah. And I think the staff is to be really, really thanked. I mean, I know that the energy y'all put into going on tours and meeting with staff was amazing, remarkable. I was also delighted at how delighted the staff was to host you and to tell their stories and to introduce what they do.
I love them, too.
Mike Lane and then Shauna.
One quick thing on the airport, and that's some misinformation from the audience. We are not adding any runways. The airport expansion is an expansion of the terminal and the addition of the customs facility, but it is not to add runways. We'd be thrilled if we had the kind of air traffic that would require us to have more runways, but we don't. We have a very serviceable runway that is good for the near future, certainly, for the kind of airplanes that we will have coming here and an expansion of those numbers of airplanes if they should happen. The other thing I wanted to mention was, I haven't said a whole lot about New York State government lately. They kind of get under my skin, but something happened very recently which I think deserves note, and that is the Commission on Pay Raises for New York State legislators made a recommendation, and I thought it was a very good one, and I hope that our state legislators will adopt what has been recommended by this committee, and that is that the salaries would increase for legislators to, I believe, $130,000. They wouldn't be getting the kind of Lulus that they get for seniority, whether they have a particular committee chairmanship or not. And their outside income would be limited to about 15% of their salary. So that means particularly those legislators who are attorneys who have still have private practice outside of the outside of their role as legislators, and that goes people like Sheldon Silver or Bruno or Mr. Bruno's the majority leader's name.
Joe Bruno.
I couldn't think of his first name.
Not Bruno Schickel. Is that what you're thinking?
those people that are out there for both money and power. And if we think there ought to be term limits because so many incumbents are elected all the time, if you make them choose between money and power, they'll choose money, and they'll be gone after a reasonable time, and that we'll have new legislators coming in, which will be a healthy thing for New York State government.
Thank you, Mike. Shauna, and then Mike Sigler. And did I see Glenn? Okay. Shauna.
Last Tuesday, I went to a conference in Albany that was sponsored by the Drug Policy Alliance, and the conference was on marijuana, justice, equity, and reinvestment. And it was quite interesting because there were people that were consumers. There were people that were growers. There were also government officials, elected officials. And I went to three different seminars. On two of the seminars, there was the commissioner from Colorado, as well as the commissioner on drug policy from Massachusetts, where they're just recently legalizing it. And it was a conference that talked about the good and the bad of marijuana. So I liked the fact that it was well-rounded. Some of the concerns that we noted in this legislature were also concerns that they're seeing in the industry, both in Colorado as well as Massachusetts. The concern with people driving under the influence is definitely a big concern, and they're seeing that in Colorado. Jason forwarded me an article a few days ago about that. And then there also have been concerns, and they've been trying to more or less fix and work backwards a bit on regulating marijuana edibles so that children don't pick them up and think that they're candy and ingest them. So making sure that the packaging is safe. And in some states, they're actually outlawing things like gummy bears and brownies and the edibles because they're just finding them too dangerous.
Should make them all look like broccoli.
Oh, a Brussels sprout.
Yeah. So it was good information. It was also nice to see many people from the state assembly were there. There were also Kruger, the person who wrote the Senate bill that we supported. Her chief of staff was there and explained some more information about the MRTA. There were some questions on that, and it was a nice discussion. So thank you, Drug Policy Alliance.
Thank you, Shauna. Mike Sigler.
I just want to correct the record on something. I don't disagree with a lot of what Mike said, but Joe Bruno was acquitted of all federal charges in that case, and I believe that when someone is found not guilty of charges, that should be noted.
I'm sorry, Mike. The point I was making is about the long time being in as leader.
I just found your person that you chose interesting. Let me put it that way. Thanks.
All right. Anybody else? All right. Thank you all. And Don Barber, thank you for waiting. I don't know if everybody knows, Don Barber was a longtime supervisor of the town of Caroline. And in that capacity, I'm not sure, it's probably not an overstatement to say you invented the idea of the health insurance consortium. But
that's not true. It was actually Steve Witcher.
Steve Witcher started it? Okay, a former county administrator. Well, Don was a key partner in that, and a partner that who was able to essentially create the Council of Governments with us as well, because that was essential to creating the consortium. And we really have a tremendous amount to thank you for, Don. Don is now the executive director of the consortium, has been basically the staff person holding the reins of a very large board, for one thing, for a number of years. And it's great to have you here, Don. We appreciate your time and your service on this initiative. It's so important. And we're going to need the screens, right? Okay. You got PowerPoint? Okay. All right. We'll bring those down. Just a second.
All right. So you've been hearing, and I know you've been lamenting how government gets a bad rap for almost everything. Well, this is the one thing, if you go around the state and you meet your fellow legislators, they'll always remember Tompkins County for this one thing, which is the health consortium. So with that, I just want to give you a brief history and update. And should I wait for the screens? Probably.
Sure.
Just hold on.
Thank you.
Don, that was the second great thing we invented. The first one was Mega.
That's right. There actually were many great things that we had done, and they were captured in a document that the Johnson School put together called The Rest of the Story. And so that was if you haven't seen that document, it's pretty impressive. There we go. So the health consortium got started from a real rough beginning. Before I was elected town supervisor, there was a county had a board of supervisors. And as I became a supervisor, I found that there was a lot of distrust and miscommunication and parochialism going between the different municipalities. And so a Municipal Officers Association was created, and that was to give the rural towns and villages a chance to speak with one another. But the city and county were banned from that organization, so we had more work to do. And it turns out that in 2005, towns were suing the county over land use decisions. And this was probably the low point of intermunicipal cooperation that I could ever think of. And we were all embarrassed to be in that place. And so the county fostered shared services discussions to talk about ways we could work together. And we needed a platform to do that. And so the Council of Governments was identified and created. And that was a platform for mutual support. And that's the reason why hopefully it still exists. We identified a universal need, which was that health insurance premiums were increasing much faster than the rate of taxes, and there would be something had to give. And so we applied to the Department of State for a shared municipal services incentive grant for $250,000, and this was the work that I mentioned of Steve Witcher and the county staff to make this help make this happen. And so we identified Article 47 as a pathway to reducing health insurance premium. And Article 47 is our self-insured, self-funded insurance companies. So we actually write the benefit plans. We collect premiums, and we assume 100% of responsibility. It allows municipalities of any size to join the consortium risk pool. And we become one community, so the Tompkins County loses its identity. It's just part of the consortium. But it does require a minimum of 2,000 contracts, and we started, we actually had 2,001. And this is actually the biggest stumbling block for the other counties that you'll hear trying to create a consortium, is they cannot come up with the 2,000 contracts. So the regulatory requirements were that we adopt a municipal cooperative agreement, that we fund two statutory reserves, the surplus reserve, which is 5% of premium, and the incurred but not reported, which is 25% of paid claims. We create a role for labor, on the governance structure, and also that we are overseen by the Department of Financial Services with quarterly financial reports and triannual operations audits. And so the formation process was to establish the benefit plans that complied with labor contracts, and that process took roughly 18 months with an outside consultant working on that. Our goal was and our promise was that no employee would see a reduction in benefits, and we consolidated 20 plans down to 8. We also had to develop a municipal cooperative agreement, and this was quite a lot of juggling as well, because the county and the city of Ithaca had 50 and 30% of the members of the consortium, and yet we had a lot of small voices from the smaller municipalities that need to be considered as well. So we did adopt that municipal cooperative agreement, and this was, again, in an 18-month period, and we thought we'd be ready to go. So we applied to the Department of Financial Services for our certificate, and that's when we found out we had another 18 months to go. We had to negotiate for the number of labor directors. We had to negotiate the incurred but not reported reserve, which I mentioned before was 25%. We were able to get it down to 12%, which was no small task. We also had to fund a $1.22 million surplus reserve before we could get our certificate. And we did get our certificate on October 1st, 2011, that we would be able to start operations on January 1, 2011. So how does the consortium actually operate? This is our organizational chart. There are board of directors, which includes a director from each municipality. So the county has one, as well as the town of Cincinnati, which has one employee. They also have one director. The gray boxes are the advisory committees that are made up of directors that report to the board and actually do the heavy work, just similar to your committees on the different issues. The joint committee is actually has more labor than employers on the committee, and they review and advise a benefit plan design. We also have Owning Your Health, which is the wellness committee, and it has local providers as well as community representatives, and the Excellus and PROACT, our claims administrators, also serve on that committee. Also advising and supporting the board of directors in the green boxes are professional services. So we have CPAs and actuaries and our benefit plan consultant, as well as I have a little note up to the top, Tompkins County Finance Department. Vic Snyder is our treasurer, and his staff does the billing and pays the invoices, and now they are actually helping do the enrollment process for the consortium. So that's another professional staff that we use. And then the purple boxes over to the bottom right are the our claims administrators, Excellus, and PROACT, and they are extremely valuable partners for us in many, many ways. So who's in the consortium? We started with 13 municipalities from Tompkins County in 2011. And in 2015, the board expanded the footprint to Tompkins County and the six contiguous counties to Tompkins. In 2014, we actually included the city of Cortland and the town of Lansing, and that was our first growth in membership at that time. And then in 2015, when we looked at our MCA, we made the change to broaden our footprint. So this is a list of our currently our members in the health consortium. There are all 17 municipalities in Tompkins County are part of it, 8 from Cortland, 11 from Cayuga County, 2 from Chemung, and then Seneca County has one, Seneca County itself. Just a little bit of description of what, where we're at in the continuum of risk and cost. All our small employers that started the consortium and all the ones that have been joining are in the green box over to the right. They're in community-rated plans. They have no risk, and they pay the highest cost. The insurance company is carrying all the risk, and they charge handsomely for it. The larger employers will be in the blue boxes, most likely experience-rated plans, where they buy a plan from Excellus, and most likely, and then they share some of the liability. And the county was pushed way over to the left with a minimum premium whenever it joined the consortium. So Article 47 is actually the yellow box, self-insured plans. So we are an insurance company. And Article 47 actually goes a step further in that we are not charged the fees and the taxes that the private sector are charged. So we are already starting out with lower overhead costs. We also do not pay a broker fee, and we are exempt from other fees and taxes that the federal government charges to private sector insurers. So this is our just a pie chart of our expenses. And what I want to draw your attention to is how large the paid claims portion is and how small the other overhead is. And this smaller overhead then is actually what helps us to become more efficient as time goes on. So the paid claims is, and this chart for 2017, it was 93.56%. Excellus is at 80% for community-rated plans and 85% for self-funded plans like the county was in. We're at 93.5. That's significant, and that's why your premiums are less. To give you a benchmark, Medicare is at 97. And for this year, we're running over 94. So we're a very efficient operation. That's why the smaller municipalities are joining us.
So so in other words, overhead administration, basically, 6.5% or so for us. Is that what you're saying?
So our overhead in this chart is 4.5%. Yep. Excuse me? Medicaid's at 97% efficiency. So we're at 90, we're essentially 94% right now. And the reason why this number percentage goes up as we keep adding members, the overhead stays relatively constant while the claims costs go up as a percentage. So that's why that number is going up, and that's why Medicare is ahead of us as well. Also, we need to purchase stop-loss insurance, which is that real, that green slice, which is so the, any claims that are beyond our $600,000 deductible, then the stop-loss carrier pays that. So our goal was to actually reduce the rate of premium growth, and this chart shows that we were successful. You'll see Excellus and the private sector on the right, and our premium increases in the center. And we've been averaging roughly half the rate increase of the private sector in the 8 years we've been in operation. So this is our growth since we got started from 13 to 39, the number of contracts from 2,000 to 2,850. Our net assets started at 1.22 million when we got started, and there were now we're at 26.2 million at the end of 2017. The annual premiums have increased to 42.5 million. So it's a pretty big operation. Just want to make one comment about the 1.22 million that had to be posted before we could get our certificate. The county and the city would essentially have to put up the bulk of it because they had most of the covered lives, but they didn't have the resources for it. And so we, the smaller municipalities actually made up the difference till we could have that amount posted. And this was true intermunicipal cooperation that all the other counties are trying to find a way to make that happen. And this was probably turning from our low point to the real high point. This was the high point, and it happened in 2010. So it was really significant. I think we had a common enemy, which is the Department of Financial Services, but we also had a real vision that we were going to make this happen some way or another. In 2011, the $928,000 savings were all incurred by the smaller municipalities. That was the reduction in premium costs from the private sector because we were a more efficient operation. They were moving to a larger risk pool. In 2015, I mentioned the rest of the story that was done by Johnson School to talk about all the initiatives the county was doing that were not able to be included in the property tax cap calculation. Then the consortium was $1.7 million at that time. For Tompkins County alone, 2017, using the same methodology that Johnson School did with all the municipal partners, we have $2.2 million, and that number would be much higher this year, for sure. So that's, you should pat yourselves on the back for being part of this consortium and supporting it so well. We still get lots of support from staff, and Michelle up there and next to Martha is our administrative clerk, and she is outstanding, as you know, and she somehow doesn't get any sleep because she does two full-time jobs, but thank you, Michelle. Any questions?
Thank you so very much, Don. That's great to hear the whole thing, and I hope we can get the PowerPoint sent to us so we can. You probably have it already. Okay, Michelle probably created. All right, so that we can all kind of have those numbers. So I want to also point out that the Finance Department and Michelle aren't paid for that work by the county. It comes out of the cost of the consortium. That's the part of the overhead, right?
It's part of the overhead, yeah. Okay. We stand on our own 2 feet.
Right.
Yep.
Okay. Questions? Did I see Rich? Rich and Annie and then Mike.
Yeah, you had the term incurred but not reported reserve. I was wondering if you could not go into great detail, but just to tell us a little bit more about what is that.
Sure. That reserve is for claims that would have occurred in 2018 but are not paid in 2018. They will be paid the subsequent year. So we are required by statute to have an actuary determine that number. When we were applying for the for our certificate, since the city and the county had 80% of the covered lives, we used their data because we had their data. And we actually had the town of Ithaca's data as well. So it was 85% of the people, and we made the calculation, and our IBNR was 12%, was 10%. And so the statute said 25. We said that's ridiculous, and not only that, if we had to raise that much money, the county and the city would not join. It just would make the premiums too high. And after staring each other across the table and seeing who would blink first, we had eye drops. We were good, and we didn't blink first. They did, and went and let us go to 12%. And they've not given that 12% to anyone else, even though our current IBNR is 7.5.
Our current what? The IBNR. That's
incurred but not reported.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you,
Annie, and then Mike Lane.
Thanks, Don, for your presentation and for all your work on this consortium. I mean, saving the taxpayers for the countywide and all the municipalities. Right. So thank you for that. I had a question as far as when you said one or two slides back, the $26.2 million in assets.
Yes.
Can you describe what that means?
Sure. So we have four reserves. Two are statutory that I mentioned before. We also have a rate stabilization reserve, which is 5% of our premium. For the times whenever there are blips, either by the federal government manipulating new benefits that have to be added or something that comes up, and they do come up because we are heavily regulated by both the federal and state governments for things that have to be included in our plans. So that's just a way to help with that, as well as if we have a bad claims year, it also allows us to cover for any spikes in the premium. And that is currently at $4 million. So then we also have a catastrophic claims reserve. As I mentioned, we have $600,000 in deductible, but on occasion, the stop-loss carrier will find someone that has an illness that can be very expensive the upcoming year, and they will actually tell us that they want us to carry like $1 million worth of risk. And so we have to carry that risk, and we add that to the catastrophic claims. So we have those four reserves, which are worth, they're around $12,000. And that, excuse me?
$12 million.
Yes. And then we have, on top of that, we have our fund balance, which is $14 million. And that fund balance is part of the assets that the county then has. We're not encouraging you to leave because when you do, your health insurance costs will go up, and at some point in time, you'll lose that money. But it has been, we're using those assets to, because there's no stockholders. The only way we can get those back is through premium stabilization and premium reduction. And you can see that we've done that, keeping our rates at 4 to 5% of the last 5 years.
Thank you. And just a quick question to follow up. So I'm assuming that when you said the number of contracts should have started with 2,000 and now it's up to, I can't remember, 2,800 and something.
Right.
So those are per people.
Those are not covered lives. Those are actually employees and retirees. So we're at almost 6,000 covered lives.
6,000 coverage, then what are the...
Because of family members?
That'd be the family members, the spouses and children. And
okay, I get it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Mike Lane and Mike Sigler.
Congratulations on the number of new municipalities you've added. I've always thought it strange we have all the municipalities in Cortland County, but not Cortland. And last year I was told by one of the Cortland legislators that their insurance advisor, whoever that was telling them that our consortium was teetering on the bankruptcy. Teetering on bankruptcy, let's put it that way. I think I investigated it, and maybe it was you who told me that this was coming from the insurance industry trying to persuade municipalities not to join. And in that case, if that's all true, what are we doing to counter that kind of fake news?
Sure. Well, first, I'll give you a prime example. As Seneca County came to join the consortium, and their broker gave them a similar line, but they got our premiums, and was saving $150,000 a year. They decided that that's their broker fee. They decided that they would move with the consortium because the broker lost that money, which is the reason why they were spreading this misinformation. We just if you've been to our website, and hopefully you all will go, it's very transparent, and Michelle did a great job of working on it. It's really easy to work through to find the information you're looking for, and we have archived everything right from 2010 when our board was first formed. We have all our board minutes right all going back from the beginning. All our financial information is there. All our benefit plans are listed. So all that's out there. So to answer your question about what I'm doing to counteract that, when somebody asks me a question, I answer it. I have no budget for marketing. I actually have too much marketing to do because each municipality will tell their neighboring municipality about the rates that they're getting, and then they call me, and they want to join, and that's how we're growing so fast. Cortland County has got many issues, and that was with health insurance, and that's really not one of them.
Thank you. Mike Sigler.
Don, I have just two questions. On the pie chart, it looked like Excellus Blue Cross Blue Shield, they were getting like 2.8% or something like that.
It's both Excellus and PROACT, that's the combination, yeah.
That seems low to me. I mean, do they do it per, I mean, why would they charge less to do ours than they do for themselves, you know what I mean?
Well, because there's no fees or taxes that they have to include with ours. It was really interesting when we did an RFP to get started. They gave us a lower contract fee than they were charging TST BOCES. So Excellus understood that we were on the cusp of something new that they wanted to be part of, and they didn't want to be left behind. And so they offered us a great rate. Since that time, of course, we've been on property tax, and we've told them that our municipal partners, they're at a 2% limit, guys. So they've limited themselves between 3% and 3.5% going forward. So it's been pretty significant. As I mentioned, they've been great partners. And PROACT actually kept their contract flat when they re-upped it.
So that's not something strange that I was looking at. I'm like, because that did seem low to me. I'm like, wow.
It's a very good price. But if anyone has used that service, we are not getting any complaints from the quality of service. They're not cutting our service because of that price. They're just great partners to be with.
That's great news.
Yeah.
The other thing, we passed last year, we passed it again this year. Is there anything we can do to help you extend this this program to, you know, NGOs, and rural libraries, things like that? Anything we should be doing?
Sure.
That Martha isn't already doing, I should say.
So both Mike and Martha helped develop a letter that was sent to the Department of Financial Services to open up the pathway for other municipalities to join the consortium, as well as other quasi-government agencies to get the bulk of their funding from the public sector. And the department has this information. They've been working on it for 2 months, and I was hoping to have something before today. But they recognize that what we have is actually doable and should happen other places. And so they're working internally to try to make that happen. As soon as I get that letter, I'll forward it to both of you so you'll have it, and there may be other things that we can do. But short of that, I'll just mention we wanted to get the consortium started. So I worked with the unions. I worked with the Senate and Assembly leadership on the consortium. We wrote letters to the editor of the Albany Times Union, and then we had the labor unions come to bat for us. And so if we're trying to do this, I mean, there's no reason we can't pull out every political lever that we can think of to get them to move off dead center.
So that was going to be my question. So the specific, and it's in, if anybody wants to be reminded, it's in your minutes, because we did this last meeting, packet 63, I think. Don, the couple of key things we're asking the state for is to allow organizations like public libraries and IURA, Ithaca Urban Renewal Agencies, to be able to join. But then there are some other things that you're trying to push for and negotiate for, right?
Right.
Is there anything, is Neil Breslin going to be the new Senate insurance chair? Do you know?
I don't know. I don't have those connections.
He's the ranking Democrat, right?
He was a ranking Democrat on the insurance committee. Yep.
Okay. NYSAC
is very much aware of all these initiatives as well, and has written a letter to the Department of Financial Services supporting what we've asked for and saying that that's on their agenda to work on. But until we hear something back, we don't know what specific, how we should focus our efforts.
Okay. Were there any other, a couple of bullet points about any other of the changes that you're looking for?
Sure. The other changes we're looking at is, I mentioned the 2,000 covered contracts is a real heavy lift for most counties. And the reason that they want that is they want to have enough viability to the insurance company to get started. But it's really all about money. And as we found with our health consortium, that after 4 years, you can actually pay back the money that you would borrow. So the $1.22 million was borrowed from all the municipalities to get us started. And before we started year four, we paid that back to everyone. So any small group is coming together, after 3 or 4 years, they'll have enough revenue that they've generated that they can pay back the state. So we're saying the state should be loaning them the money and set limits that are based on actuarial data. We actually supplied that to them, so it shouldn't take a lot of work on their part to move forward. And the other is to talk about things that we've done are the incurred but not reported. Take that 25% off the books. If it's not 12% or less, then they shouldn't even be talking. That's just a real scare to any municipality that's trying to start an Article 47. And so those are the key things that we've asked for, the real hurdles to get started.
Great. Thank you so very much. Any other questions? All right, Don, this is great. We really appreciate
Martha. Yeah. One quick question. Is there a geographic limitation to how far this consortium can go?
Under statute, no.
Okay.
But it's been a decision by the board that we're looking for providers that have roughly the same cost structure as we do in Tompkins County, thinking that the Hudson Valley or Buffalo, Long Island would not. So we're just trying to stay where we are. As Martha mentioned, trying to work with a board of 39 directors plus 6 labor, that's 45 directors, that's a lot. We're currently looking at trying to come up with a different structure, maybe something similar, as Mike Lane mentioned, MEGA, that we could help this be manageable going forward. It's just a lot of directors sitting around the table.
And have you had some of these larger municipalities reaching out to get advice on starting their own?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I've been all around the state. Yeah, I'm talking to
that's
them.
Wonderful.
And as I mentioned, one of the things that's most interesting is I talk about the intermunicipal cooperation that we were able to pull off in Tompkins County. They swallow hard because they don't see it on the horizon, but it can be done.
Right. Wish them all good luck.
Yeah.
Anything else for Don? All right. Thank you so very much.
You're
this
welcome.
Is really an education, and we really appreciate your time. We appreciate your hanging around and waiting. Thank you, Don. Have a good holiday.
Congratulations to the county for hanging in for this.
I have a couple of updates for my report. To follow on the airport discussion, just want to remind you, I think y'all maybe got the notice that we're starting the American service to Charlotte on Saturday. And I believe the ribbon cutting or meeting the first flight or whatever is happening at 11 o'clock on Saturday, and join us there. We'll maybe we'll have balloons and cake like we had for United. So Charlotte on Saturday once a week, and if that goes as well as the United flights to Dulles have gone, they will increase those soon. Speaking of that, the United flights, United has already made the decision to add a third flight a day to Dulles in Washington, D.C. That's going to start already. I mean, really, like in 2 months. They made that decision in 2 months. So it is, and I heard from Matt Colbert, their representative, that this is sort of the best launch they've ever seen of a new service. That will start in April. So not yet, but it'll start in April. So, and the more service there is, the more the prices come down. It really is it's sort of an inverse proportion. So I'm flying that way to Washington for that conference in January. It's awesome. But I found out it would cost a lot of money if you went Wednesday to Friday. So I got NYSEC to pay my room over Saturday and save $500 on the airfare. So look around for the flights. It's a great service. That's good news on the airport. Mike Hall has got the FAA grant application in. We've gotten for... they've got about $1 million worth of eligible projects. There's a cap of $10 million if they should get that grant. We've gotten support from our federal delegation, and that's on my list for January to see if I can knock on some doors to encourage that we get that grant as well.
Other things with New York State, got a notice the other day that the state is opening new offices, state-funded offices for immigrant assistance. It might be Office of New Americans, something like that. I can't remember the exact title. There are a number of them around the state, and they announced that there will be an office serving Tompkins and Tioga counties. To be decided whether it will be in Tompkins or Tioga County. So I called Phil Rumsey, he's the guy who sent it to me. I said, well, we want that here, clearly. Told him about Catholic Charities, for example, that has an immigrant services office, a CERP program, that is literally, its name is Catholic Charities of Tompkins and Tioga Counties. So he told me some more about it. He said, yes, we are confident that, you know, you've got a great chance at this. It's something that needs to be applied for. I forwarded it on to Kathy Slaughter so that it can be distributed to the relevant nonprofits that might apply. So wherever that office will be located, it would be serving both counties. But I think he sounded pretty clear that the idea is that they see Tompkins as a more likely place. A couple other things in state government. I want to mention that Crystal Peoples Stokes, the African-American assemblywoman from Buffalo since 2003, has been named the new assembly majority leader. Joe Morelli was, African-American woman who's really shown a tremendous amount of leadership over the years. Joe Morelli was assembly majority leader, and he got elected to Congress replacing Louise Slaughter. So that's another change in state government. And the governor had had a big speech yesterday, rolled out what he's calling his 100-day agenda. And it's pretty much everything on our shopping list, kids. It's awesome. It's like LGBTQ rights, reproductive rights, gender equity, voting reforms, end the cash bail, legal marijuana, Green New Deal, new $150 billion into infrastructure, close the LLC loophole, and affordable housing, and that's not even everything. So so look for a lot of energy. My guess is he wants to get out in front of the state Senate. He wants this to look like it's all his idea. That's great. We'll take him.
We don't care.
That's right. We'll hold him to it. So speaking of state stuff, we have the NYSAC conference coming up in Albany at the Desmond, January 28th to 30th, I think. Katrina has sent that around to everybody. I want to encourage anybody who wants to go to let Katrina know. We still haven't figured out kind of what the exact amount per person that we've, in the past, our history for NYSAC conferences. I want to sit down with Kathy and Katrina and look at how much we added, what's the total amount this year that we've got for 2019 that we have to spend. But we really want to know whoever wants to go to NYSAC. I mean, NYSAC is clearly a priority for this travel money. It's so directly in our wheelhouse. It's how we get to know the decision makers and the policy influencers, both on our advocacy side with NYSAC as well as in the government. So I think in any rubric or any definition of how we spend the travel money, NYSAC would certainly be at top of the list. And the February or January conference is usually more important than the September one. So please let Katrina know if you want to go. I've also sent out an email to everybody asking for your suggestions as to how we should set up the allocation of these funds. We really need to try to make some. We're going to have to make some decisions before GO really chooses this around because NYSAC is coming up so soon. We certainly have enough money to send everybody to NYSAC who wants to go in February and January because, that's the first thing. But please think about it. Should it be first come, first serve? No. But should it be everybody gets to go one conference? Should it be everybody gets a certain budget? Should it be, how should we decide, if everybody gets a certain budget, but then that's not used by
July? Does that money go back to other people? How does that, how should we set this up so that certainly I really want to have everybody be part of that conversation. So that's the last thing. The only thing I also want to mention, there's been some cards up here on the mailboxes. I'm going to pass them around. I want to make sure one from Joe and Amy Mariana and a couple of others that you should really read. I want to make sure everybody sees those. Are there any questions for any of that? Okay, thank you very much. County Administrator Jason Molino.
Thank you. I have a few things to update. Briefly, you'll see this flyer that was sent around, the Public Works apprenticeship flyer. This is something that conceptually started before my arrival, but we picked up after sometime this summer. It's a partnership that we're working on with the city and the town of Ithaca. Essentially what it is trying to develop a pipeline of folks to be fed into our public works and highway departments, areas that we can sometimes have challenges with recruiting different types of candidates for. And it's an opportunity to give folks a little taste of what it is to work in a public works or highway department. And after a 9-month, really, what we'll call apprenticeship, they have the ability to be hired by the municipality. And between the city, county, and town, we generally have floating vacancies amongst all three of us that would be willing to hire and have the ability to hire AGOs, laborers, and MEOs. So a little bit of the parameters of this program is we want to hire three individuals. Each municipality would be basically supporting the funding of one of the candidates, and we would be using our seasonal funding that we have for seasonal employees to support one of these positions. And they will be county employees. That's more just the logistical piece of things, but what we're going to do is rotate each employee for a 3-month stint in each municipality. And we have a curriculum that both the Public Works and the two highway departments are working on to give these candidates different exposures to different experiences. So, for example, with the city experience, they'll probably get some background in water sewer programs, where highways might be more around road improvements, stormwater improvements, and then also the town will be working on some parks improvements and those types of things. So they get a well-rounded experience to different public works initiatives, different types of public works work, and highway work in those different municipalities. The goal being that every 3 months they'll rotate to a different municipality. So we'll have one, the town and the city will have one, and then every first 3 months rotate, and the second 3 months rotate, so on and so forth, to get different experiences. Coming out of that experience, the individuals will probably have some limited training and some certain certifications. So they might get flagger certified, they might have some OSHA training, of blood pathogen training, right to know workplace, find some basic training certifications that they can either take with them wherever they go, or if they stay with or are hired on a permanent basis with these municipalities, they'll be able to have that training under their belt.
Yes. Quick question. Would the permanent positions that they might be eligible for be civil service positions?
HEO, MEO, and laborers are civil service, but they're not competitive. They're all non-competitive positions, which allows us to do this way. Okay. Yeah. It's a good question. Those are the few positions that are not competitive. When you get into some of the more detailed public works like water plants, sewer plants, and some of the distribution and collection systems, these might be competitive, but these are usually entry positions into those. One thing, it's important, I think it's an important part that you just brought up. In between this 3-month cycling of these candidates, there's probably going to be 1 or 2 or 3 days of training in between the transitions. And one of the things we talked about is giving a civil service review to candidates saying, hey, here are opportunities still in the public works realm, and this is how you navigate the civil service system. So that's one of the things that I think we'll offer in training-wise to these potential candidates. It's a really interesting initiative. It's an area that I think we all have challenges recruiting for, and it gives a great opportunity. I know Michael Woody and both HR departments, all three HR departments have met several times. Amy Hendricks is really moving the initiative forward to really spreading out the recruitment effort to make sure we're trying to get a diverse pool of candidates. I believe this was just advertised this week, and I think our goal is to start 3 candidates in March. A March to November span. So It will probably not overlap with snow plowing, so there, you know, snow plowing may not work its way into the curriculum, but there is a possibility for these candidates to get their, you know, their CDL permit, and if they want time behind the wheel, they'll have the ability to drive, you know, a CDL vehicle and either get some hours under the belt, which can ultimately hopefully feed into their license. So I think it's an interesting program. I know we're going to have monthly follow-up meetings and try to gauge progress, review candidates, you know, talk about performance, those types of things. We've talked about also making sure that staff that is aligned with the candidates are good mentoring staff, good staff that have good mentoring abilities and leadership abilities to model good behavior, so on and so forth. But all in all, I think everyone's fairly excited about seeing what can come of it. Any questions about that program? Or?
Yeah, one of the things that we've talked about briefly, but worth mentioning, logistically, they'll be, and this I can't remember, they will technically be county employees, or we're technically paying for it, and the others are paying us back. They're county employees that will be rotating through city and town stints.
Yes. They'll be county. This conversation initially started with having them be individual employees of each municipality. And that kind of got confusing because every 3 months they would be changing employers. So we said from a logistics perspective, let's make them all county employees. We're going to use the county website, HR website, for application processing. For ease of logistics, let's make them county employees, and the other municipalities will reimburse us for those costs. At the end of the day, it's not a huge cost. It's a nine-month cycle, but logistically it's just easier for us to do it.
Any other questions for Jason? Anything else?
Yes, I do. I have a few other things, if that's all right. I will be attending the NYSAC conference. I've been asked to be a panelist on one of the sessions regarding how we address Code Blue and some of our homeless issues. So I'm going to be tapping into Kit and Amy to help me put together a brief presentation. I'll be on a panel with one of my former bosses, Kathy Rooney, as the Schenectady County Manager. So I'll be there. Having fun with everybody else, and at the Desmond. Shared services plan reporting. We have received the guide on how to report shared services initiatives from the shared services plan that was adopted last year. Jesse in our office, our compliance coordinators, spearheading the reporting process, and has been meeting with the different partners, different municipalities, because we had several intermunicipal arrangements, trying to document what we did, and then we'll be submitting that reimbursement to the state and hopefully getting some cost reimbursement to us. That's all I have right now.
All right. Any other questions for Jason?
Oh, I'll give one update if I can. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Youth Services Director Search, we have started the review of resumes. We have phone interviews lined up this week with probably personal interviews on the finalists, probably, I would say, after the new year.
All right. Thank you, Jason. This talk of NYSAC, I forgot to say. Last January, we organized meetings on the second floor with governor's staff on that Wednesday afternoon. I'm going to see about doing that again. We have certain issues that we're certainly still trying to move forward, the Alcohol and Drug Council, the Third County Court. But I'm going to see if there's also an opportunity for people who are interested, who may not be in a decision-making line on a particular issue we're lobbying about, but somebody, if you want to meet the Department of Health agency person in the governor's office, if you want to sit down and talk with the public safety person, just kind of get to know the issues without having a lobbying agenda. If people are interested in that, let me know that too, so I can work with them and you know, try to set up that kind of meeting. So I can't promise that we'll get such meetings, but I think it's a really helpful kind of experience. I mean, a lot of people were able to go last year. Not everybody who wanted the governor's folks said, well, this is maybe too many people. So we want to make sure we kind of match up folks with folks they're interested in talking with and make it a good experience. But just let me know if you're interested in that, and if so, what kind of subject area. Jason?
Just one thing I wanted to circle back with, if it's all right. The discussion about the airport and the bonding request today, you know, I spoke with Mike Hall earlier today about some of these questions that came up. Obviously, I was not part of the development of that project. Mike was. The legislature was aware of it. You know, Mike is obviously very, and the legislature is very aware of you know, issues in the community and concerns that they that the constituents brought up this evening. You know, there would never be a plan moving forward that would support some of those initiatives that were being suggested today. And I think I just want to make that clear. You know, Mike is very conscious. He's lived in the community a very long time. He would never spearhead an initiative like that, nor would this legislature support one. So I just want to be that clear. The other part of this that we didn't bring up in the discussion was that, you know, Global Cornell is an important player in the international travel ability. You have, you know, they're a commerce driver. They have a lot of presence across the world, and they're an important piece and have been an important piece to supporting the airport and its success, both short-term and long-term. So while I didn't bring that up in the discussion piece, and it hasn't really been brought up, I think it's an important part. They've been a big contributor, and I think this helps them grow. And when Cornell can grow and succeed, it's going to help the community long term. So I just wanted to put that out there. And obviously, I'll follow up with Mike on some of the questions that came today. I know Mike has been persistent in requesting a meeting and a sit-down with some of the individuals that were here today. I'm sure he'll succeed in that, and we'll be able to circle back with the legislature on what comes from that.
Thanks, Jason. Any other questions? Leslie.
I don't have a question, but I do want to thank Jason for circling back to that piece. I think it's really important and at least highlighting a little bit of who Mike is, because I think people don't know. I mean, I appreciate hearing the concerns that folks have. Otherwise, we're not doing good government. We want people to come and share their concerns and to find out and get information. But I hope that folks will also take the time to understand who the airport manager is and what he stands for, and look at his record as well. Because I want to believe anything can happen, that Mike would not do anything that would jeopardize anybody's freedom and things like that. He would just as soon not have a facility if that would be the case. So it's good to hear you say that as well, Jason, and we'll be continuing to monitor that very, very carefully. I also want to just go back a little bit to this, the apprenticeship program very quickly, and say I'm excited about it. You know, it's been a lot of talk. I've been in a lot of conversation about it over months. And we're thoroughly excited. From a diversity perspective, we hope that it will help in terms of attracting a more diverse pool of candidates, as you said, and people who often don't get into these jobs for whatever reason. There are also other partnerships that are working, and one of it, those partnerships will come from the agency with which I work, GIAC, because one of the things we also realized for many years ago, we offered a CDL program. You know, for lack of funding, we weren't able to continue to offer that program. Many of our TCAT drivers now came through that program. Airline Limousine, some of our MEOs and HEOs right now came through that program. People have been asking us to do that. We also recognize that there are a number of folks who would be interested in these jobs who don't have some of the very sort of basic skills, and often they get turned away at interview times because of that. So we are looking at, you know, creating sort of a pipeline so that we can help feed candidates who would be good candidates for this, because, you know, they know how to use a measuring tape and the real basic things sometimes that, you know, would make somebody not be eligible for a position. So it's a great partnership, this city, town, and county partnership, but there are also some other peripheral partners who are trying to do something to help move this along as well.
Thank you, Liz. Anything else for Jason or my report? All right, I think let's take a recess, but I was first want to let you know that Katrina McCloy's daughter, Elizabeth, is the creator, and I guess Katrina and her husband as well, but the creator of these lovely, adorable, I don't even want to take it apart, these candy sleds. Thank you to Katrina. The little lollipops weren't those for me. So, and in the break room, anybody, please, get, there's Swedish meatballs, there's cheesecake, there are cupcakes left over from this morning's lunch. So,
Martha, I do want to say thank you. I came and I said, oh, somebody left me an African-American snowman. Well, I felt good
I got
about
one
it.
Too.
I did. I felt really good. So thank you.
Absolutely.
You got
I know.
Yeah, I've got one too. Yeah.
Mine had no beard. He had a bare face.
I know. I love it. Deborah, blame Deborah. They're from the Ithaca Coffee Company at Trip Hammer, and if I didn't buy them all out, there's, you know, there might be some more. So yeah, I love finding them.
No, but it just also reminded me of back in the day. I was just sharing with my colleagues when Barbara Blanchard every holiday season would have these lovely wrapped up biscotti and whatnot. Right. So y'all are slacking. Get with it.
All right, 10 minutes if we can get back here. Thank you. Okay, go ahead, Jonathan.
Okay. So as most of you recall, the county joined a lot of other municipalities who are suing the drug companies that produce opioids. And I mentioned at the time that there would be some burdens on county departments. There would be some discovery. And that has occurred at the first round. What fortunately happened is that the judges determined that there would be very significant discovery for a small number of large municipalities and that most other municipalities would have a more limited discovery. So the discovery that we had to do involved administration, personnel, the sheriff, mental health, health department, but it's mostly answering questions and giving details about the county and our departments and what claims we might have regarding the opioid lawsuit. So that's sort of the first stage of what we've had to do, and that was done, finished like last week. Obviously, this suit will go on, and there may be more demands on our departments, but, you know, it's going on. We're doing discovery now, and, you know, like I said in the beginning, I don't expect it to resolve quickly. And that's my report. There's some other litigation we'll discuss in executive session.
Thank you, Jonathan. Any questions? Dan.
I just want to clarify. Did you say that all the discovery was done last week? We submitted all that stuff?
We submitted all that we are required to submit at this point. Okay. There may be further, like the nature of discovery, there are demands, and then there could be further demands and further demands. So at the moment, the court's allowed a certain amount of demands. We've responded to all of that. What will come in the future, I don't know. I mean, hopefully it won't be much more, but it might.
And what happens, how would you characterize that workload? Light? Minimal?
For some people, there was a significant amount gathering information on our budgets and stuff. Kevin had a lot of work. Personnel, quite a bit on, you know, some of the programs we have and things like that, and others more minor. You know, I had a bunch of questions for Frank and people in the health department and mental health, but they were pretty much able to answer them without a lot of research. You know, in terms of what programs do we have, how much money goes to that, that kind of thing. So I wouldn't say it was huge, but it was something.
Thank you very much.
So I presume we weren't one of the bigger municipalities.
No, exactly. We were not.
Okay. All right. Great. Thank you very much, Jonathan. Rick Snyder, Finance Director.
I have three things tonight. If you find at your seats a sheet of paper, not in your red folders, but what I handed out right before the meeting started, it's a brief contingency report. I'm holding up the wrong thing, so since I'm on TV, I better keep the right thing. So on the contingency report for 2018, this is a brief report that shows you out of your contingency fund, which you vote during your budget time, how much to place away into this contingency. We had budgeted $1,388,000, almost $1.4 million. The list that follows is all the different budget adjustments and resolutions that you, the legislature, have passed throughout the year, right up to date, except for those which are in the agenda for this evening. But if you add up all those expenditures, we've added appropriations of $829,000. And that leaves a balance at this point in time of $559,000. So that is what remains in your contingency fund. We will probably spend a good deal of this because you'll see more budget adjustments coming yet into January and February because we allow departments to adjust the budget. And once they get their final year-end reports, there may be some other contingency items that they request, just like you saw in your agenda for tonight. So can't really predict at this time if we'll have used much more of this or not by the end of the year, but we're in pretty good shape for this time of year right now. It compares favorably to the past couple of years where we did not spend all of our contingency funds either. Any questions on this?
Annie.
Thanks, Rick, for your report. I had a question as far as you said in January they could still be, departments could still be, is it through the end of January or?
No, it's, I speak with the departments. I go through the budget, and if I see things that are still not in balance where there's overages, I call them and I say, are you planning on just doing an in-house budget transfer to take care of this? Do you have funds available in your own accounts? Or are you going to have to go back to the legislature? And depending on the dollar amount, if it's like six figures or five figures, you can bet it's going to have to come back before the legislature. If there's small budget adjustments where it's $1,000 here, $10,000 there, they normally make those budget transfers within their own department. And to answer your question on when's the cutoff, we do check runs for 2018 well into the very last day of February, and we don't close the books until March or April. So you could even see a budget adjustment come through for 2018 as late as March or even April, but usually you will see a few in the months of January and February, and then it pretty much trickles away.
Thank you.
Deborah?
So the thing that determines whether or not it goes against one of these 2018 contingencies is if it's for an expense that it's incurred in 2018?
Mm-hmm. Okay. If it's for an expense that was incurred in 2018.
Okay. Thank you.
And I was wondering about board outs. I don't see it on the list. Did in this entire year, did we have board outs in the sheriff's budget instead of in contingency?
Yes, we never got into the contingency funds with board outs. I don't know the exact amount of expenses that we can get that out to you, but we didn't have a need to. We didn't hit the maximum budget amount this year.
Okay, which is very cool by itself. But we used to have almost all the board out money in this budget, not in the sheriff's budget. So
yeah, we
I just
had
want to confirm that we had moved it.
We had increased the amount in the sheriff's department's budget for 2018 right. to adequately fund what we thought was going to be the true amount.
Right. And in any case, we haven't used even that budget line.
Correct.
Okay. Any other questions for Rick? Oh, can you get two other things? Anything else on this? Okay. Thanks.
And then in your red folders tonight, I do have a sales tax report for you for October. And if you turn to that, in that center portion, which we love to look at, the county is doing 6.37% better for the month of October. And that is right in line with where we were the previous month for September was right around the same percentage. If you move over to the year-to-date column for the county section, at the end of October, year-to-date distributions for the county totaled $30,572,488 compared to $28,597,239. That's an increase of $1.9 million over and above last year, or an increase of 6.91%. So we're just right at that 7% increase over last year at the same point in time. I'd also like to remind you that November and December, even though we haven't got those figures for you yet, those are usually our two best months. So as we, which, you don't like that word, best?
What? Come on, Jason. What?
We typically see some months that are lower than others, and November and December are much better months than October. October's usually been a weak month. If you move down to the budget comparison at the bottom of the table, we should be at 83.3%. And regardless of which figure you choose to compare to, the gross budget estimate, which is the top figure at 89.2, or the net sales tax budget, which is found in just the unallocated sales tax revenue portion of the budget, that comes in at 88.5%. You can see that we're well above the 83 1/3% we would be at for this time of year. Any questions on this one?
Okay, thank you.
And my third item, which is not a report, I just wanted to bring you up to date on the deputy director search and how we're doing with that. We have compiled a list of the final candidates, and we've communicated with each of those. There were 10 applicants altogether that were under consideration, and 5 of those 10 fell into the category that we were going to be approaching them for an interview. We have done phone interviews with 2 of them, and we have phone interviews, and 2 of them were done today, and there's one more that's scheduled for Thursday. There's a 4th one and a 5th one that we have not scheduled yet, but we hope to have that done hopefully this week. We're running into the holidays now, so the actual scheduling of the live interviews, which will be the last and final piece of the puzzle, may get pushed back now because of the holidays. We don't think we're going to be able to do that. It all depends on the candidates and how close they live. So we probably won't have that new person hired by January 1st, as I had told you the last time we met and spoke about that, but we will be very close to hitting that, hopefully, like as a youth director position, is probably closer to February 1st.
Do you expect you can do 5 phone interviews. Do you expect to have in-person interviews with all 5 or narrow it down?
Probably will narrow it down. Okay. There were 2 candidates that were very excellent that we wanted to bring in as soon as possible. One of those has since backed out, and there were reasons. They already make $27,000 more than what we would be willing to pay here. They have better medical benefits, better deferred comp benefits, things like that. So there are some things that we have in our control, and there are other things that are out of our control. But we did lose one very good candidate, but we still have 4 others that we will be speaking with in the next week if we haven't spoken to them already. Any questions on that?
Anybody?
Deb?
Yeah, just generally, when you post these job listings, you tell people what the salary is going to be, right? So why would someone who already knows they make $27,000 more than you're going to pay even apply?
I believe the opportunity to work with this legislature.
It's worth $27,000.
The legislature and silly walks and stupid questions.
I can't really answer that right now for you, but there were reasons why this person was interested in the job.
Okay.
Originally was interested in the job.
All right. Thank you.
We can touch base on
bizarre.
That afterwards.
Any other questions for Rick? All right. Thank you very much, Rick. Appreciate it. All right. We've already done the consent agenda. We're ready to go to Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Mike Lane, Chair. No, I'm sorry. That's under consent. It's in the order of PDEC, Planning, Development, Environmental Quality Committee. Anna Kellis, Chair.
All right. I have a few updates. One is one that I mentioned to the committee this morning, but I wanted to mention it to everybody because it does affect our whole budget.
Last year, and again this year, we put a $10,000 into a membership with ST8, which is a an economic development agency or consortium of sorts, and it allows us to have access to public federal funding. The primary reason that we got involved was for ARC funding, Appalachian Regional Consortium, or Commission Consortium. And they also have funding, EDA funding, and we needed to be part of an economic district to be eligible for the EDA funding. EDA funding specifically goes to municipalities that are economically stressed, and that is determined by a formula by the federal government. We just found out at the last meeting that we no longer qualify as economically stressed according to the equation that they use, and that means that we will no longer be considered for the economic district and be eligible for EDA funding. It was not the main reason that we got into ST8 to begin with. It was for ARC funding, and we will still be eligible for ARC funding, so I just wanted to make that clear. It sounds worse than it is. It just means that this extra pool that we thought we might have access to, we won't. So I wanted to make that one thing clear to everyone, along with PDEC. And I'm going to try and figure out what that formula is, because, of course, we have a lot of economic stress in our county. And I don't think that it shows up on paper, and it should. So we had a long discussion today about forest management of our Tompkins County forest lands, discussion about whether or not the department should go through the process of seeking the bids so that option was still available to us. There was discussion that we would take time and discuss that process. This will allow us to continue to discuss that process, but in the last week I found out from Katie that in order to keep the avenue open to be able to follow the recommendation of our department, that the only way that that would be possible is if they went to bid. That was something we discussed today. Dan and Amanda gave a strong presentation about leaving the forest land as it is and not logging at all and letting it do its process and go to old growth. We also had a recommendation presentation from our staff, from both Katie and Scott, about doing management to help the forest get back to a state that is not a monoculture with respect to the red pine, and that we are harvesting primarily the ash before the ash borer comes into the area, and then some other hardwoods that they have identified in decline. So we ultimately decided after some lengthy discussion that we would allow them to go to bid, but I want everybody to remember that that is not a formal vote, nor did they need that formal vote from us. We take that vote in January, so the January 28th PDEC meeting is when the committee will vote on a resolution whether or not we accept a bid, if in fact we even get a bid. And then that will come to the February 3rd, I think it is, legislative meeting for a final vote. So we still have quite a bit of time for discussion on that. We did have a presentation on the Energy Advisory Program. I'll just say that's going exceptionally well. In 4 months, they have gotten about 14 businesses that have inquired. Many of them have started the process, and that is only 4 months, and they're starting to get inquiries without any outreach at this point. Those were the two main presentations. We did have a presentation on First Mile, Last Mile pilot project for TCAT. Very, very exciting, and that would allow for when people get off the bus, they can get picked up by Gadabout or other services that they're exploring and then taken to their homes from there. So it does that last mile leg that may significantly increase the number of people that are using the TCAT system, which is wonderful. And I think I have a resolution.
Yes.
Resolution M, affirming Ithaca Tompkins County Transportation Council ITCTC recommendation to increase the ITCTC staff directory's salary, and that's ID 8273.
Second by Dave. Is there discussion? All right, ready to vote? All in. This is a short. Okay. Oh, really? Okay.
Mr. Lane?
Yes.
Ms. Corman?
Yes.
Are there any no's? All right, that's unanimous. Thank you very much. Any questions for Anna? Amanda?
Just that the next PDEC meeting is on the 28th, which is also the first day of NYSAC, so I don't know if you want to consider.
Oh, yeah, good one.
I don't know who's going to be here or who's not. So
yeah, I just noticed that myself.
I will look into that, see if we can move it to an earlier time. Sorry, Kathy. The whole craziness of changing schedules has not stopped.
Yeah, and when we get to housing, we have to do that for housing, too, because of Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Okay. Thank you very much. Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
We did have a meeting. Most of what we did is covered in the resolutions, all of which, I believe, went through on the consent agenda, a lot of housekeeping measures for the end of the year. One of the things we talked about was, of course, the Budget Committee acts as our auditing committee, and we, as members of the committee, received what's called a fraud letter. And the auditors have asked us if we're aware of any, I guess, financial fraud in the county or any appearance of fraud that we brought to their attention. And they also ask us questions like, how do we receive our information about the budget and other financial things that happen? And it was five or ten questions. I forgot how many there were, but it's apparently something that happens every year. Others have seen them before, but I wanted to let everyone know that we are quizzed on things like that by the auditors, because and if there's fraud that you're aware of, I wasn't personally, but I suppose we should report it to the auditors. But go to the county administrator first.
So if it,
Jason, are you telling us something?
No, just advising you.
The other thing is on the direct report evaluations, we had an executive session discussed how we will proceed with those, and we'll be doing some write-ups on them, and eventually you'll all get to look at those.
Any questions for Mike? Mike, I put on your table and Glenn's and Dan's notes from that you asked to distribute my notes from those interviews. And I also put notes to Leslin and who else is on the committee, Mike Sigler. So the notes have been distributed. I kept copies of all of them so that if you can't read my writing, just give me a call. I have a copy, so we're going to type them up and get them back to you, right?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean-Claiborne, Chair.
I'm Chair. I do not have a report, except I want to say thank you to all of you interdepartment heads for a good working advance retreat, getting together to talk about how we move forward in implementing some of the suggestions and those that we came up with from our most recent climate survey as we continue to move this county to a place of being fully diverse and inclusive. So thank you all for showing up. Thank you to the food committee, whoever is responsible for that. I hadn't heard any complaints from anyone. We try to meet all the needs. Thank you to administration, Amy, Jason, Lisa, Marsha, for all your work as well in making sure that it occurred. And I look forward to 2019 and us moving those one ideas. And for those of you who had 18 ideas, I'm not staring at anybody in particular, overachievers, we value. I have one request of everyone.
When we talk of diversity and inclusion, it is a serious request. When we talk of diversity and inclusion, the descriptors that we use often are things like difficult, challenging work. And I want to encourage us to be mindful of those and see it as the way we want to do business and not necessarily that it's a difficult thing to take on. So I just want to encourage that for 2019 and going forward, that we think of it that way, as enriching, as vibrant,
opportunity,
and not as difficult. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. But you haven't told us about the Hangar Theater. Did I hear you were, you know, you did a thing on Monday night?
Mrs. Claus?
At the kitchen?
I participated in a fundraiser at the Kitchen Theater last night. And, yeah, I came as Mrs. Claus, because you can't have a holiday party and not have the guest of honor, Mr. and Mrs. Claus. Well, I don't know where Mr. Claus was, but Mrs. Claus was there.
I'll send around a picture right now.
And it was a,
oh, good.
It was a hoot. It was quite a hoot. I needed a laugh more than it needed me. I needed to be there just for my own sanity.
Well, congratulations. Thank you for representing us. All right. For the Housing Committee, we met yesterday. We heard from Brent Katzman from the Ithaca Board of Realtors. He had made a presentation at the program the Realtors put on November 29th, and he brought that to us. It was about home ownership and some trends in home ownership in the county. And we had a chance to actually really dig into the information much better with him there. We also heard from Greg Thomas of Law New York. You remember we added funding for another position to deal with to try to prevent evictions. They've got the job announcement, he said, and it's being reviewed. He's got a bureaucracy like worse than cooperative extension as far as reviewing this job announcement. He hopes to be able to really post it early in the year. He brought some statistics to us, and in 2017, which is the last year they had full stats, had 198 housing-related cases and come in the door. And remember, they only at current staffing, they only can take up the folks who actually have a court date. So they are not; they just don't have the bandwidth to deal with folks before that point and try to head off eviction. So that was he was giving us an update, and we look forward to hearing from him again. We had a couple of items on the agenda already that we voted. And just one other thing, the IURA, Anissa Mendizabal, thank you, from IURA came and presented an outline for us, a review of kind of what they do and where their money goes. They are preparing the next five-year consolidated plan. And she was asking for our input into what should be priorities. So we gave her off the cuff, kind of, here's what you might want to look at. Staff is going to look at that again in the next month and bring that back to the Housing Committee. They have till, April to collect input. So I think it's we forget what a big resource they are. They have, a lot of money, even though it's been coming down mostly in most recent years. But it's good for us to look at the options and have some input there. So I think that was pretty much it for the meeting. If there are any questions, Deborah?
I just wanted to add something, Martha. Mr. Katzman came and gave us a presentation on the housing market generally and what impact that has on the workforce person, 80 to 120. percent of AMI who's out there searching desperately to find a good buy in the housing market. And I bring this up only because somebody who came to talk to us about the airport suggested that the reason our taxes keep going up is because IDA keeps giving away money. And I just wanted to note that according to Mr. Katzman's report, over the last 8 years, the number of houses that have changed hands in Tompkins County have dropped from somewhere over 700 a year to fewer than 500 a year over the last 2 years, which of course means that the prices go up. And so the median sales price of homes in Tompkins County now in 2018 is right around $250,000. And of course, if the fair market value of our housing is going up, so are our assessments. And so when people see their taxes going up, despite the fact that our tax rate is going down, it, I think, has less to do with what the IDA is doing in terms of abatements than it does to the fact that our housing market is limited and the prices are very high.
Thank you, Deborah. And I would also point out when we do our budget announcement, when we calculate the impact of our budget, we always say the median home price is such and such, and it's been under $200,000, I think. That is, these are two different numbers. The sales price is the price of what sold in 2017. The median of what's sold, so that's 250. The number we use for our value for the budget is the value of every home. That means including all the rest of the homes that haven't sold. So you're talking about two different numbers there in case anybody's confused. But we, if anybody's interested, we've got that presentation. We can send that to you. Thank you, Deborah. Dan.
I wanted to ask about something you said in there. I didn't catch enough of the details. You were talking about, I think, Law New York and that they weren't able to do pre-eviction work. Okay. Didn't we fund an OTR to do pre-eviction work?
Okay. Right, but he's just getting ready to hire that person.
Okay, so they haven't been able to do it, but now they will because of our funding.
Right, yeah, and obviously they won't have the money until January 1st anyway, but they're just doing their sending, they're formalizing the job description and hoping to post it soon. And Milton Meadows in Lansing broke ground yesterday, and Mike and I were there, and really exciting to see 72 housing units, affordable housing, all on heat pumps, LEED Silver. And the town was really, really supportive and just really excited. It's a great project. So, and the Community Housing Development Fund put in just shy of $300,000 to help make that happen. So, all right. Public Safety Committee, Rich John, Chair.
Thank you, Martha. I guess I'd start out with the resolution. This is Resolution P, Appropriation from Contingent Fund Replacement Pay Reimbursement Sheriff's Office, and I would move it.
Seconded by Dan. Questions? Short form roll call.
Mr. Lane?
Yes.
Ms. Corman?
Yes.
Are there any no's? That's unanimous. Thank you.
The Public Safety Committee met on December 5th, and we covered a fair amount of territory, but our big presentation was from Lee Shurtleff, who came in and talked to us about emergency medical services. And he provided a very large amount of data and information about what's going on with emergency medical services. And there was some good news and some trends I think we have to look out for. Certainly, ambulance service is largely outside of the control of county government. But it is connected to everything else that's going on in terms of police services and fire services. The good news is that we have pretty good coverage of the technical emergency response, the paramedics that show up. Where we're starting to see some strain is with the first responders, the speed of getting there. And that's largely attributable to what's happening with volunteer firefighters and volunteers in general. And this is something where I believe on a county level we should be thinking about whether there's something we could do to assist the towns and villages in making sure that response is there. The trend across New York State seems to be pretty clear that it's going to get worse, and it's going to affect us in a way that it's affecting a lot of other parts of the state now. none of this appears to be easy to resolve. It looks like it's technically complicated, and certainly the regulations that New York State have for being a emergency responder seem to only go in one direction, that it's becoming harder and harder to maintain the credentials. And, of course, it's expensive. With all that said, when people dial 911, they need help. And we need to think about if there's some role for the county in helping make sure that there's fast, efficient response there. It was a very good presentation by Lee, and I wanted to thank him for doing that. He really is a great resource of information. Public safety is meeting again January 7th at 3 o'clock right here.
Thank you, Rich. Any questions? Dan.
Comment, not a question. There is something we can and are doing about it. Jason rearranged some positions and some budget money, and did we put an OTR in also? I can't remember.
Yes, I think that was part of the OTR, and part of that was advancing one of the positions from part-time to full-time with some focus on trying to develop some training. So there's several shortfalls, not to get too much into it, but there's several shortfalls with the volunteer agencies. One is that the interest is coming up short, so there's not many people interested in volunteering. Two is the challenge, like you said, in maintaining credentials. So the first responder approach is lower training requirements because it's a first response, meaning their treatment ability is less, but they have the ability to respond first for critical instances. The challenge for a lot of the volunteer agencies is that they don't have the infrastructure to always provide consistent training on a regular basis. And with a lot of volunteer agencies, leadership changes on an annual basis, so there's not always a consistency to a training approach. So you've got less interest, less leadership, and at times a more complex training curriculum. What we can do and what Lee, I think, in the Department of Emergency Response is going to look at as we get into next year is there an ability to centralize some minimal training efforts that can be an easy place and repository, so to speak, for these volunteer agencies to send their folks to get the minimal training they need. And that's kind of the start, I think the start of it. Bigger conversation as to what's the longer-term goal. Don't know that we have the answer right now. Or what the longer-term outcome is going to be, but we can definitely provide some of that centralized training piece to the puzzle. Getting first responders is a significantly less hour requirement to initially become a first responder. You're talking about basic first aid, CPR, those types of things. And then that can be a feeder into large EMT certifications, but again, you're dealing with the level of interest. So, yes, we have the ability. We have some OTR. We have an OTR available. And I think as we get into next year, we'll start to how do we identify what that centralized training opportunities are. Answer your question.
Training and recruitment was going to
yes, be. Yes, I'm sorry, you're right.
I'm not sure what the balance is yet. But.
Yes, I mean, recruitment recruitment is another piece of that puzzle. I left that out. And how do we encourage recruitment, participation, and retention?
And I would think, we did talk about this, I can't remember where we were talking about, that the increasing state regulations where somebody has to go through the same training every year or every other year. So you and I are both on the NYSAC Public Safety Committee. Maybe we can get that conversation going. Because
yes.
It's not that we don't want people to be trained, but is there a balance? If they have, you know, up until 10 years ago, it seemed like people were well trained. Are these regulations really necessary, and are they just creating a barrier? So maybe we can bring that out at NYSAC. Henry.
And also, I should mention that Irene Weiser from TCOG also did a study last year about this issue. You know, she won a Togo Award, and she was going to continue looking at this issue next year.
There's a Cornell class continuing to work with her on that, yeah. Anything else for Rich? Thanks very much, Rich. Next committee is Health and Human Services Committee. Shauna Black, Chair.
We met December 10th, and Judge Miller joined us and discussed mental health court moving forward. He also discussed the new person that he was going to hire. He has, I believe he's going to be listing the job description soon. And Reach Medical also joined us and talked about their services here in our community. Xavier Campbell, who is a graduate student at Cornell, presented his findings on the source of income. It was a very, very good conversation. Thank you, Anna, for working with him. And in the end, I think it was helpful for all of us because his conclusion really came down to if source of income would be a viable option for our county. And he could definitely, he could not confidently say that it would be. There were some concerns that he had. So it was nice that he was able to do the research. He also provided us with case studies, and it was helpful for our committee to really have that conversation. Also, we did have a conversation about the Human Rights Commission and the number of commissioners we would like for that. At this point, we are going to keep the number at 15. Reverend Clark, if he is interested or believes that there should be a different number, then he will present us with that in our next HHS meeting. I have formulated a letter that will be going out this week to people that applied for the Human Rights Commission, just to notify them that we are in receipt of their application. We have also, Henry, myself, and Anna have been working on a schedule, and we will be interviewing and speaking with people the January 16th through the 23rd, I believe. We have some daytime hours as well as some evening hours to accommodate people that have worked during the day. We're also, I believe we have one weekend day that, oh, maybe not, sorry. So our next meeting is January 14th.
Thank you, Shauna. Any questions or comments? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, David McKenna, Chair.
Thank you, Martha. F&I has not met since the last meeting. We'll be meeting in East Chambers at 3 o'clock on Thursday of this week. Looking forward to discussing various projects that are in the offing for the county. We'll see where that discussion goes, I guess. That's my report.
Thank you. The last meeting of the year. Any questions for Dave? All right. Thank you very much. Transportation Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
We did meet on December 7th. Two resolutions. One was on the consent agenda, in which we recommended that we not take any action to discontinue ride-hailing services in Tompkins County. The other one is the bonding resolution that we had the public hearing on for the airport project. And I'm going to go ahead and move that. And this is resolution Q. Resolution of the Tompkins County Legislature as elected legislative body of Tompkins County, New York, in accordance with section 147F of the Internal Revenue Code of 1986 as amended, approving the issuance by the County of Tompkins, New York, of its Airport Bond Anticipation Notes 2019 Series B in an aggregate principal amount of up to $7,500,000. I so move.
Second by Glenn. Deborah, did you have a comment?
No, I was just going to second.
Annie?
Yes, I had a question. Let's see, line 18, it says about halfway through, installation of additional solar panels on the top of the existing curbside canopy. I thought the panels on the canopy were not going to happen. We were just going to do the panels in the parking lot.
I don't really answer the question. I will say that I don't know that it hurts you to have it in here. This is an authorization, so let's assume for a second it is there. If you were to take it out, we would have to possibly do the resolution over again. So I don't know that it hurts it in being in here. We can get clarification on the design that you're asking for. This is an authorization for this money to be used for all of these purposes.
Right.
So we can get clarity as to what the design is. There may be some, but I'd have to look at talk to Mike again.
Okay, because yeah. It was my understanding, I've talked with Mike, that wasn't going to happen. So,
and again, if it doesn't and it's in there, it doesn't hurt either way. It's not going to hurt you to have it in there, and if it doesn't happen.
The canopy was one of the things that the governor's office asked for us to look at again. So there may have been solar panels in the original canopy, and there may not on the new ones. I'm not sure, but that's my guess.
this would have been written by bond counsel, and they kind of get the list. And I mean, I think we can understand that these things change during the life of a project, and I think it's better to have more in there that might end up not being in rather than worrying about having the authority to pay for something that's not in the list. Does that seem
right? Yeah, I mean, that's a correct statement. So it's authorized in here. If the design has changed, it's not going to hurt to still have it in here. You're just not going to be doing it. It doesn't, you know, versus you're going to do it and it's not in here, then you have to come back and reauthorize the resolution. But I can definitely get back to you about whether or not that's changed or not. Regardless, I would recommend you move forward with it. It won't hurt if it doesn't happen.
Okay.
Yep. Okay, anything else? This is a long-form roll call.
Mr. Lane?
Yes.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Yes.
Mr. Sigler?
Yes.
Ms. Black?
Yes.
Ms. Champion?
Yes.
Ms. Dawson?
Yes.
Mr. Granison?
Yes.
Mr. John?
Yes.
Ms. Kellis?
Yes.
Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Ms. Corman?
Yes.
Ms. Robertson?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
That's unanimous. Anything else, Mike?
No.
All right. Thank you very much. Government Operations Committee, Dan Klein, Chair.
Thank you. I would like to move Resolution L, urging the New York State Legislature to adopt a late application procedure for the agricultural land exemption for a good cause.
Seconded by Deborah.
And the reason I pulled it is because I was asked to add one whereas. So where this would be the final whereas, and it would say, whereas Assemblywoman Barbara Lifton is preparing to introduce a bill to make this change.
So if you hold it, he can make a motion to amend, right? Yeah.
I believe so. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So is that friendly to Deborah?
Yes, it is.
Okay. All right. Anybody have questions or comments on that? All right. Thank you very much, Dan, for taking that up. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you.
The next meeting, Government Operations Committee, will be Wednesday, January 16th at 9:30 a.m.
All right. Anything else for Dan?
So no meeting tomorrow, right?
Correct.
You said no meeting tomorrow.
There is not a meeting tomorrow.
Okay.
The absence of a meeting tomorrow.
All right. Thank you. Can I get a motion on the December 4th minutes, December 4th, 2018? Moved by Annie, seconded by Anna. Any discussion, suggestions? All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. I would ask for a resolution to go into executive session to discuss litigation, labor negotiations, and personnel regarding a specific person. And we will not go, I do not expect us to come out and take any action when we're done. Moved by Deborah, seconded by Anna. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. All right, we'll take a 10-minute break so the cameras can go off. Thank you. Yeah.